I have seen tons of trailers that do not include fingers. Most of the trailers I've seen have no fingers in them.
I know, the seeing the fingers is critical.
No, no, for that it is, yeah. Rolling for host. Do it.
Five. Oh, wow. You got loud. Three.
Fuck. One?
Ooh.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
I win with five.
Nice.
Nice.
Yes. Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast with Chaz, Mike, and Josh, the show where we, the occasionally weekly show where we talk about
ish.
Video games, politics, news, culture, music,
Pokemon,
books, TV.
Probably not.
Favorite Pokemon?
I have no any idea.
Favorite Pokemon?
What?
Squirtle, because of the name.
Good,
right?
Yeah. Bulbasaur, is that one?
I think so. Yeah.
Then that one.
The only Pokemon name that I know that isn't Pikachu, and the two that you just said is Koffing.
Really?
There's what about a Pokemon called Koffing?
What about Charizard?
Ooh, oh yeah,
Charizard.
That's a good
name, right?
Koffing? Everybody knows
as in like
I am the gerund of.
I believe so. Yeah, that's how it's pronounced anyway.
K.
Yeah.
I think
welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast.
This is probably what we don't talk
the
about.
The show
Pokemon.
Where we talk about Pokemon names. None of us with ever having played Pokemon. Mike, you are Mike.
Sup, Charles?
Say hello.
Hello.
How you doing, Josh? How you doing?
Sup.
Cool. Who should start? Oh yes, before we start, thank you for listening. We love you, all listeners.
I just like you.
Okay. Yeah. I love you, but I'm not in love with liking our listeners.
You're all right.
All right. Hit us up at theescortmission.com. Find our social media identities there. If you're going to buy something, one of the numerous and lovely products or games that we talk about on the show, please consider doing so through our Amazon link and give us some of the proceeds. And please tell a friend about the show, because that is the only way that we can grow the show at the moment. Josh, how was your week?
It was good. Yeah, I don't have a lot to talk about from this past week.
Neither do I.
So I guess I could talk about some things in the coming week.
Because
This past week, I played some more Mass Effect 3.
Nice.
Because...
How many hours are you up to on Mass Effect
3? I don't know, 150 or so.
Wait, you were only at... You were at 146 or something. So
okay,
I guarantee...
160? I don't know.
So that may sound impressive, but I just want to jump in here for a second.
It's not that crazy.
Right, it's not because I'm about to destroy it. A coworker of my wife's posted a screenshot recently of how many hours on Steam he's played Team Fortress 2.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, those people are crazy.
You want to guess?
10,000?
A coworker,
2,000, but still 2,000
hours. Oh, that's
hours.
A lot, cuz a coworker of mine was at 700 and I thought that was insane.
Yeah. But it probably doesn't compare to like MMOs. I bet you people who play MMOs are far surpassing.
Definitely MMOs will blow it all out of the water.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, we did like 500 in vanilla WoW.
That still sounds like a lot.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of hours.
That is.
I bet like
many
chess and Go masters are probably the only ones who are like 100,000 hours or something, you know, over the course of a lifetime.
Well, there's that saying like 10,000 hours to become like an expert at something. So
Malcolm Gladwell.
Right. So my wife's coworker, not a master yet. He's only 1/5 of a master at this point. At 2,000.
Call him a journeyman.
Man, how much sushi do you have to...
I was thinking of Jiro.
Oh, right. Yeah,
prepare before you're a sushi man. 10,000. We should do
10,000 hours is not really that much if you break it out into 40-hour weeks.
They were saying it takes 30 years or something to become a sushi master.
Yeah, which is way more. I mean, it's like vastly more than 10,000 hours.
That's a lot of hours cutting fish.
Yeah, I love how in Jiro Dreams of Sushi, you just make rice. Or you don't even make rice. Like, you get to, like... burn seaweed for 2 years before you can do anything else.
Like, yeah, you get to, like... punch squid.
That's what you do. You tenderize squid.
You only get to ride in the boat, and you get to hold like the chum or something. You
punch squid nonstop for a couple hours, and then they go, too chewy. Keep punching.
Yeah. Epic.
So
Epic Squid Punching. That's my new band name.
Shit came out that we didn't get or play. Like, I can't believe none of you guys played Dishonored yet. I know you're waiting for
Gamefly. I'm going to play
the
hell out of it.
But I thought Charles was going to play the hell out of that. I thought you guys were both super into it. It looks very good. The reviews are great. I kind of want to play it, but I kind of don't want to pay full price for it right now.
There's a guy at my work, two guys at my work who are crazy over the moon for it. They think it's just the greatest thing ever. They both were like, oh, I'm so psyched about Halo 4. And then this came out and they decided to try it. And they're just like shitting bricks. It's so great.
Nice.
So I didn't, I bought Bioshock, for example, and never finished it. So I feel like
this is
a game that was going to do the same thing to me. So I definitely didn't want to pay 60 for it.
I did the same thing to Deus Ex, except I really enjoyed both Bioshock and Deus Ex, even though I only played them like halfway through for a while or whatever.
Yeah, and I played Bioshock once it finally came out on like Xbox downloadable area.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And loved it. Played it all the way through. That shit was tight. And I bought Deus Ex and played it all the way through, and it was tight.
So you're going to fucking love Dishonored.
No, I'm looking forward to it, but I'm still a cheapskate, and thus I'm doing the Gamefly thing. But it also means you're kind of at the behest of them sending it to you.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But
and then Forza Horizon came out this
week,
and neither one of us got that, which is surprising. Cause that
I don't feel like it's as surprising. You guys are both like
huge, it's a Forza.
Normal Forza people.
It's a Forza.
But
it's Forza.
But is it really like
it's Forza
worth
with funner extra shit? Like,
but not fun enough to buy day one.
Well, no. Like I said last week, I probably would have bought it were it not for XCOM.
And why didn't you buy it, Josh?
I would have bought it if not for Forza 4 being virtually identical.
Right.
Like it.
The things that you like about it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, when I think about playing Forza Horizon, I'm like, what do I want to do in there? I want to go race. Why don't I just put in Forza 4 and race them? And then I did that last week.
And do it with more a larger library of cars.
Yeah, it's probably like mostly the same cars.
It's fewer cars. I think it's like 30% less cars.
Yeah, but then new tracks. So
right. Yeah, the open world thing is cool.
But I don't even remember what's the word? Extinguishing or like getting through every track.
Exhausting
every track.
Car term.
In Forza 4. I mean, there's so many variations on tracks in that game.
Yes. Yes. Each track is almost a little
mirrored
open world
mirrored backwards.
They were some of them were really cool.
Each tracks will have, you know, 8 or 10 different layouts, right? Different cutting off parts of the track, short versions, medium long ones, etc.
Anyway,
Nürburgring is 14 miles.
Anyway, next week Assassin's Creed 3.
Yes.
If I'm ready for a project game at that point, I think I am. I might just get that shit day one, because that should be great.
Yes.
Are you gonna wait, or because you're into XCOM still? Or are you gonna be?
I'm definitely gonna finish.
Trying to rush through XCOM. So
I'm not trying to rush. Well, insofar as it's the only thing that I want to play,
yeah.
And I just try to steal time every chance I get to play it, because it's so fucking good and I love it so hard. I am rushing through XCOM. However, rushing through XCOM means being super deliberate as you play XCOM, because if you rush, you get fucked in that game. But I definitely am psyched about AC3, and we'll play it as soon as I get done with XCOM.
Yeah, real quickly, I'll just mention, then we'll talk about it more when you guys get to it. Like, I played the XCOM demo. It was all right. I played halfway through To the Moon. It was all right. But really, I want to talk about DJ Mac's Technica Tune, which comes out this Friday. Like, the reason I bought the Vita, I'm super stoked. That shit, I could not be more stoked for. I want it, like, now. Weirdly, it's not on sale like anywhere. It's on sale from their actual website, right? If you want them to ship it to you, but that's crazy. I'm just hoping that on day one it pops up in the PlayStation Network market to just download on my Vita, right? Because everything's supposed to launch.
It's not at like Amazon or something.
It's not on Amazon.
It's not online anywhere.
There is a Korean import available on Amazon for like $80. Right?
Yeah.
But the regular one is not for sale anywhere except their website, as far as I can tell. But it's not on sale till Friday, so maybe that'll all change on Friday.
Weirdly,
no one's taking pre-orders. And literally every day for the last 2 weeks, I've thought, oh my God, I'm looking forward to DJ Max. I haven't pre-ordered it yet. I should go to... Fuck, that's right. I can't pre-order it because it's not on sale anywhere. And I've been like checking repeatedly. And then I keep remembering, oh yeah, I don't want to pre-order anyway because I'd rather have the digital copy, not the physical copy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just have to wait till Friday and then press buy, hopefully. Man, that game's going to be good. So Assassin's Creed, DJ Max, I don't know, we had another debate, whatever.
What was the zinger was,
Bayonets and Horses.
And Horses.
Yeah, so what was the context? Because I just heard the meme. I didn't.
Romney said...
there's fewer bayonets and horses now?
No, Romney said we have fewer he made the point was about downsizing the military. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, we have fewer ships in the Navy now than we did in 1916 before World War One started. And Obama said, when it was his turn, you mentioned the Navy, you know, we also have fewer horses and bayonets in the Army because the nature of warfare has changed. It's not about numbers of things, it's about our capabilities.
Right? Zing. Okay, I don't know why that became a meme. That doesn't seem that
it's a
zingy.
Bit of a zinger. Like, we also have fewer horses. It's a bit of a, like, I guess. Condescending.
I guess it's been smashed into the ground already, so I'm already over yeah. it.
I like the replay of the previous debates when Candy interrupted and said, yeah, he did say that.
Yeah.
For the quote for Obama the day
Candy,
after the Libya.
Say that a little louder, Candy.
Say it a little louder, Candy.
And obviously, like, the Democrats had a plant.
Right. So the SNL sketch last weekend after that was it was so good. It was like a mock debate. And at that point, and they're just going at it. They're like fighting, basically. They're like, they are so aggressive. And mm-hmm. then at that point, he says, say it again, Candy, or whatever. And then he drops the mic.
Nice. Debates need more mic dropping.
It was awesome.
For sure.
Surface came out.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the Surface RT.
RT, right?
Specifically.
That one.
Which is what's being reviewed and kind of semi-shat on by a lot of people.
It seems like not quite ready for prime time.
Yeah.
So hard. It's one of those things that's really hard to review on day one.
Well,
like an MMO a lot of times.
The question is, what do you mean by ready for prime time, right?
Well, and even the iPhone was hard to review when there was no app store and no ecosystem. It was...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because they're shitting on it partly because there's no ecosystem. The
largely.
App,
largely. Yes.
That's a large part. Yeah, they're basically saying the hardware is great, but the ecosystem is not there and the right. first party apps are kind of are janky and yeah. buggy. But... Like I said, day one of the iPhone, there was no app store. And
yeah, there literally was not even the option of an app store.
Right, so it right. seems a bit harsh to base so much negativity based on that.
Yeah, it's really hard to judge at this point, like to even score it or do reviews. I mean, the hardware seems impressive. There's a complaint seemingly that it's too big, even though it's the exact same weight and thickness of an iPad. It's just like elongated.
Yeah, it's elongated.
Somehow that makes it a lot bulkier to hold even in... portrait mode, which sounds baffling to me. If you're holding it in portrait mode and it's the same weight and it's only taller, how could that be harder to hold? That doesn't make any sense.
You might bump your microphone. Whoops.
Technically, there in theory is a little bit more leverage, right? If it is longer, then it's creating more of a leverage, so it would be a little bit harder to hold, although I'm sure that's very difficult to discern. I think the issue is with the 16:9 form factor. Right, it's a true widescreen form factor, so content will display in a prettier manner. But and it's when it is on the kickstand up on a desk, it's going to look like the computer screen you're used to seeing. But most tablet form factors, you know, it's been decided by, you know, the universal hive mind that it's a better form factor not to have a pure widescreen if it's going to be as big as an iPad.
So if you're holding it with one hand in landscape mode. Yeah, that sounds even more difficult, right? Right? With the Surface harder than the iPad. Right. But if you're holding it in portrait mode by the side with one hand, if it's taller than an iPad but thinner, doesn't that even make it easier? If you're holding it in portrait mode from the bottom, like trying to have leverage of its entire weight
right.
from a couple fingers on the bottom... Then I could see it's harder to hold, but who holds iPads like that? Don't you usually hold it by the side, or do you hold it from the bottom?
Yeah,
or do you hold it from the corner so you're kind of supporting?
Yeah, I don't hold it like a phone. Yeah, I usually hold it with two hands, or you know, normally it's just like horizontal in my lap or something.
Right.
Or I hold it like this.
You're resting it on something most of the time.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of their criticisms were
those criticisms are janky,
kind of niggling.
The software not being there and the bugginess, like sure that sucks, but the OS seems good. So I think we just had to wait.
I think it's a total, you have to wait. I think that does make it hard to review, and it means that anything that's even slightly bad will be picked apart mm-hmm. as, like, that's really the only thing that's here to criticize, because other than that, it's just, like, a slick piece of hardware, and it's got this magnesium chassis, and, like, I can't really say anything about it other than it's kind of nice, and maybe it'll be good, or maybe it'll be bad. So it's like, oh, the OS crashed on me one time. Becomes like the only thing that you can talk about.
Yeah, although I think it was The Verge. I don't know. I read a few different reviews, but someone was specifically picking apart the flat keyboard cover. Because I didn't realize there were two different ones.
Yeah, there's two. Yeah,
literally a flat one like it was glass, except whatever. That
well,
was made
it's
of.
Got it's
or it's raised.
It's got ridges. Even the flat one has like physical touchable okay. outlines of keys that you can feel.
Yeah.
It's just they're not like mechanical and they don't click in.
But you do have
they're
to
still
press
touch
on
sensitive.
Them.
But you
okay,
have to
so
push
it's
on.
Not like an iPad. You actually have.
It
to...
It is not glass.
There's resistance.
You
it's
have
a
to
weird
press
brand
on
new
okay.
hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were basically saying, like, this is not immediately intuitive, thus bad, and I don't think I'll get better at it. And I was like, really?
So wow. That was not The Verge, because okay. Topolsky, Joshua Topolsky on The Verge...
Someone else was pretty critical of it.
...specifically said the same beginning part, this is weird and not immediately intuitive, but I got better at it while I was typing on it, and by right. the end, I was pretty comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And he specifically mentioned that it was better than typing just on a pure... you know, tablet touchscreen.
Yeah, this other person went as far to say as like I started typing this story using it and had to give up because it was that bad or something. I was like,
I
okay.
I think it's a brand new technology and therefore has a decent learning curve.
Yeah,
like none of us were good at touchscreens until we've been using them a ton now. Now it's we're oblivious to it to some extent.
Second nature.
So my other basic comment on the Surface RT or regular Surface.
What's that stand for?
Runtime. It's Windows RT. Windows Runtime.
Runtime?
Yeah, it's all runtime code.
Oh.
There's nothing compiled on that.
Because
OS.
Consumers care about that.
It's just a term for it.
It was just like Windows NT. I always thought that was kind of a useless acronym that
I
most people didn't even know what it stood for. And even if you did, it still sounds kind of dumb and
What's
meaningless.
What's NT stand for?
New technology.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
what
dumb.
The hell? Yeah. They're
I
really
loved
bad
how
at
you
that.
Could use Windows CE... ME and NT to make Windows Cement.
Nice. That's pretty funny. I did not know that.
Yeah, that was good.
So my main comment is that
Windows Cement 95.
Like, we might not think that regular consumers will buy this because it doesn't have a bunch of games. And so if you're like, which tablet should I get? The one with all the apps, right? Easy decision.
Right.
But and I'm not sure if it's too late because at this point, so many businesses have just let their employees use iPads and then tried to figure out solutions for letting them do that. But it is a huge desire for like all these companies for their employees to use iPads, starting with like executives. Like if an executive says, no, I need an iPad, you know, and then he yells at
make
IT,
it work.
Make
IT
it work.
Says, make
right.
it happen.
Yeah.
Then IT has to find a solution to allow him to do that.
Get it to
as
do LDAP
securely
and,
as possible
yeah.
or whatever, right?
Outlook,
but
Exchange.
The solution a lot of people are coming up with is like not really secure them at all, just let it happen. And so it's kind of this this problem that will be fixed soon probably by either it becoming a huge virus problem or whatever, and then... Anyway, the technologies to manage that shit are expensive. Anyway, the easier way to do it might be to say, oh, you want an iPad? Here, I'll buy you a Surface, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a tablet that is easy to take notes on during meetings and
right.
shit, except it also runs Office and also has a fucking keyboard,
yeah.
right? So it's a legitimate business device iPad, except not an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And what does an iPad have that it doesn't have? It has games. Oh, we don't want you to have games anyway, right? Like,
yeah.
Like there's all the or it has better Twitter apps. Like, we don't want you to have a good Twitter app anyway. Fuck you, right?
Well, there are lots of legitimate productivity apps on iOS, right?
I know there are those too.
Yeah.
But from a basic like business standpoint,
from a I can't trust my user to not fuck around on this.
Yeah.
I'll get them the lockdown Microsoft yeah. boring pad.
But it might happen.
That's what
I
you
mean.
Mean.
That's how Windows. That's yeah. how Microsoft has propagated Windows over the years in a lot of ways, right? So if they can sell a lot of these to business customers, then that will drive the market, and then that'll drive all the development.
Yeah.
And it'll just happen by force that way. And it sounds like the strategy they're taking, and I haven't seen that mentioned in the reviews at all. The reviews are all talking about it like a consumer device.
I mean, it's pitched and competing against
an
consumer
iPad
marketplace,
and the Nexus.
Right?
Yeah.
So to whatever extent, I mean, they want to be playing in the consumer space, right? The fact that they have, you know, potentially better business creds is good, right? I think it'll do fine in the market. You know, I think it's not going to take
Because people are dumb.
It's never going to become... No, I don't think people are dumb for buying iPads. The iPad's fucking sweet. It has the best screen like you've ever seen.
I mean, the iPad is better than the Surface objectively right now.
Yeah, well, in terms certainly in terms of app ecosystem. Yeah.
And the app ecosystem is a huge percentage of the use of the thing. Absolutely. Unless all you want to do is a browser.
Absolutely.
And Office, right. Which actually is a lot of enterprise
wants. It's what businesses want you to do. But for the average consumer, they want all the games and, and apps and stuff.
Yeah.
So an average consumer, it's pretty obvious you should get an iPad still.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, actually, I mean, in my office, I could totally see selling my boss on Surfaces over iPads just for that reason, because it runs Internet Explorer and Office, like, done. That's really all we'd need if everybody were to get a tablet to do remote whatever.
Now, maybe when the next one comes out that runs all the x86 code.
Yes.
I think that's going to be an even huger coup. Because there's so many offices running old shit that need the backwards compatibility.
I think that's a big deal one.
Which makes me sad, because it's keeping
like legacy.
Yeah, it's keeping the legacy alive when it really should. We should be moving away from those legacy apps and not keeping them around.
They are.
But I mean,
there's a reason RT launched first.
Right. But I'm just saying,
I don't understand the reason. What's the reason?
That they want to move away from it. Like, in my view, we've discussed this on IM, the next version of Windows is going to be 100% the Metro interface, and it's going to do something like virtualize there's not going to be any sort of drop back into the desktop paradigm. It's all going to be live tiles and their swanky new.
So RT just launched first because it's a more dramatic statement saying, fuck you, we're not supporting x86 apps on this device. No,
they're saying this is the direction that we're going with the OS.
Yeah.
Which I like. I'm cool with that. I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Right. I think we should move beyond.
That being said,
the legacy,
the one that I'm waiting for and most interested in personally owning is the Intel based one, the x86 based one, because it's the one that has the digitizer and the pen input, and that's what I'm super into.
Yeah, it's got the sweet pen. That's true.
That's what I want.
But it's also thicker and more expensive, and
but it's like an Intel.
It'll probably have worse battery life. It's like, you know, a million other things.
It's going to be equivalent, basically. So this one competes with the iPad. That one is going to compete with the MacBook Air.
With Ultrabooks, right? Yeah, interesting.
Should be interesting.
It looks like super sick hardware.
I definitely want to try one. Absolutely. It looks cool.
Oh, yeah. I
don't want to buy one,
but I want
to
try one.
I want
to play with the weird keyboard.
Mm-hmm. I want to play with the hinge. Oh, my God. You see the video about the hinge?
The animated GIFs of the hinge?
Thousands of hours tuning the sound and the the actual like resistance and the thunk that it makes to open and close.
It sounds real good. Did you guys watch the video of the dance experiment guys?
No, I haven't.
League of Extraordinary Dancers that did the Microsoft ad.
Ah, right.
It is a good fucking ad. I watched that thing like 6 times in a row on full screen and turned the volume up, you know? I was like, this is awesome.
I heard somebody describe it to me.
And it made you want to go right out and buy a Microsoft Surface, didn't it?
No, it made me want to go watch some more So You Think You Can Dance or whatever.
Ah.
Or watch all the LXD series. But I forgot we didn't share that. You guys totally have to watch it after
No, you shared it. I watched it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's a well-made. And I commented that I like leave it to marketing and advertising to take something small about a product and make a huge fucking production out of it, because that's basically what they did.
Yeah.
They took the click and made a 30-second crazy dance spot out of it.
So I don't think that that's marketing necessarily. I think that's something that, like, I haven't seen that ad. I have heard it described, but they have been talking up that feature since the first announcement. Like
the click that it makes?
Yes. They spent a good amount of time at the original Surface announcement talking about their industrial design on that product. And like, look, we spent a huge amount of time. I mean, I think what they're doing is pulling out one feature that's readily apparent and a big differentiator to the iPad, and talking about how long they spent designing that as a reference to how long they spent designing the whole thing. Like, we have an industrial design team that spent a shitload of time paying attention to every smallest detail, right down to the way it feels and sounds to close and open the hinge. Right.
Neat.
I'm cool. A total design snob, so I'm hot for that.
Neat. Yeah, I want to play with one.
Hot for clicks.
Yeah.
I don't want to buy one. Just like everyone else's iPads.
Right. Yep. You're just a moocher.
Actually, if DJ Max Technic wasn't coming out Friday, then I might have to buy an iPad just to play that
for two days.
The DLC.
Oh, if it wasn't coming out, okay.
Yeah.
Really?
It's called.
You would buy an iPad.
Well,
for
you can buy
2 days worth of.
No.
If it wasn't coming out.
If it wasn't coming out.
Sorry, I misheard.
I would have seen that one on iPad and said, "Oh, this is sweet. I should get this. I should buy an iPad."
Gotcha.
Because the one on iPad that just came out is called like DJ Max Ray.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And it's pretty decent.
Yeah.
But I think the Vita is going to be superior to it in probably every
way. Is it going to have this slidey back and forth?
It's 100% slidey.
Oh, like, it's all
it doesn't
on the
even
screen?
It doesn't even do the Guitar Hero like everything falling down thing anymore.
No, I mean are the controls buttons or are they touchscreen?
All touch, I think.
So you're going to have to put it down to play?
No, there's also back touching. The back touching is like optional.
Interesting.
Ooh. Wow,
it might be like one hand. I heard it's pretty awkward to like try to figure out how to hold it right to do the front and back touching.
That's what she
but
said.
But the back touching is optional.
Hi-o.
So you can hold it in one hand and do everything with like one hand.
Gotcha.
I don't know. We'll see. There's a lot that's yet to be explained there. I haven't seen a lot of hands-on demos. I've seen a lot of trailers that don't include fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen tons of trailers that do not include fingers. Most of the trailers I've seen have no fingers in them.
I know. Seeing the fingers is critical. No,
for that it is, yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. I got nothing.
You got nothing. All right, I got something. I got stuff. All right. So I finally beat Sleeping Dogs about a week ago.
Fucking A.
That's a great game. I've said it before, but it was good. It ended. The story finished. There was a climax and falling action, and then it put me back in the game saying, you can keep playing, even though
do
you beat the game. And
things.
I was like, cool, turned it off, put it back in the thing, set it back to game fly.
Yeah, it was a tiny bit anticlimactic, but I was just at the point where I was like, I want the sequel right now.
Yeah.
Can you guys provide me the sequel? Like,
I've seen enough of this. Good job.
There's DLC coming for that, right?
There is already DLC.
All the DLC that I've seen so far, and there's been several of them,
mm-hmm.
is like, spend $2 or $3 to get some, like, free money or guns or reputation
horse
or
horse armor.
Yeah, or like
it's a little horse armor.
A faster car or like yeah, it's all bullshit. Like I don't know if there's real DLC on the way or not in terms of real missions and stuff.
Yeah. But that's good. You guys should play that. I also played, I just want to mention a few others that I've only played for a little bit. In the Indie Royal Fall bundle.
Royale
bundle
with cheese.
we
over here it's called Indie Quarter Pounder bundle.
Yeah, and there was this game called Blackwell Deception, which is an old school point and click graphic adventure, you know, Monkey Island style. It's been out for a while. I remember reading this is like the fourth or fifth in the series. You can buy the whole thing for like $20 on Steam, like all of them. So I thought I'd just give it a shot, and it was, you know, it's pretty cool. I think it's, you know. You know, it's got pretty good writing. It basically features like a, is it Nancy Drew is the like
Hardy Boys
young detective kind of girl figure.
Yep.
And she has a ghost compatriot that follows her around. And the interesting gameplay is that the ghost can obviously do things that she can't, like go through doors and, you know, get shot at and not die. And that's something that happens like in the first mission in the game is, you know, there's a ghost that you're basically trying to figure out what it's doing, stealing a boat every night and finding out its story. And, you know, you have a basically an iPhone that has clues and you can there's actually Google searching in it. So you can look up clues to find out information about it, to piece together the puzzle and figure out like what to do next. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, I kind of liked it. It was neat. I mean, I know there's like a bajillion indie graphic adventures out there, so it's not like that original, but it's a pretty well-made one.
That is the thing everybody always... I mean, there's a large hue and cry on the internet that like, nobody makes these kinds of games anymore. Nobody makes
Lots of people are making these games now,
they
yeah.
make them constantly.
Especially with, like, I don't know if it was made in Game Maker, which is a very popular, like, make-your-own-game software, but it seems like it could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can say that no one is making X game anymore. Like, everybody is making every kind of game now, which is great. So
more so than ever before.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because it's so much easier to do it now.
You'll still see people who are butthurt on the internet going like, no, the games back then were so awesome. Heroes Quest 7 is the greatest thing that ever lived.
All these old genres have found new life.
Yeah, you know? Completely. It's a renaissance, really.
Super Crate Box is like literally a Commodore 64, like one screen,
yeah,
like Mario arcade game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Joust.
You're so into mechanics. Like, that's what makes a game fun for you, I think, is just mechanics. Really sweet controls and sweet mechanics.
Often, yeah.
I think that's why you don't like XCOM that much.
It's
not about mechanics at all.
I liked Final Fantasy Tactics, which is like it, right?
Sorry to hijack your session.
I'm not sure how you can say it's not about mechanics. I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, I guess I mean controls.
I still don't. Okay, I don't.
Josh loves controls, and that's something that he will talk about very specifically.
So the fact that XCOM is slow and not twitchy.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a game that emphasizes, like, Super Crate Box is 100% about controls. There is no plot. It's about mastery of a control set, and it's a very, very tight, accurate control set that you can feel like you are gaining mastery over. Whereas XCOM, there's none of that. It's like, it's turn-based, so literally the controls kind of don't matter.
Yeah, right?
It's good that they're good, and they snap, and they don't fight you. But it's not like you're gaining mastery over the controls. You're gaining mastery over the systems.
Right.
That
the game... strategy of how to beat the system, not how to engage in its mechanic.
Right.
Which is like...
The controls are semi-irrelevant, right?
Yeah.
It would hurt the game if they were bad, but they can't really be good, right?
Right.
They just have to work.
So since we're on it, I thought it was super well executed. I could tell it's a very good game.
Excommunicated,
right?
Even.
It's a game that I would call very good. Just
what?
Not X-com? Particularly
excommunicated.
Like kicked out of the church?
No, it's... Never mind.
Just not particularly in my wheelhouse. For example, when you go through the missions, it seems like the MO throughout is going to be that you don't know where the aliens are. And you need to proceed and uncover the fog of war until like you find the aliens on the map. I didn't like that concept. I would have preferred more of like the Final Fantasy Tactics or the what's the one that you guys play, 5-on-5, Hero Academy?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Hero Academy or something like that, where it's like a known quantity that you're going up against.
So you don't like Warcraft or Starcraft or Command & Conquer or any of those? Those are all you don't know where the enemy is and there's a fog of war.
I know they are, but they're very different games. And also, they're not necessarily in my wheelhouse. Yeah, I prefer...
Does the demo...
Because the unknown is, like, randomness. Then it's like, oh, I might throw my guy out there, and then he just gets surrounded and murdered, like, immediately, and it's not even my fault, and then I'm going to be tempted to restart the whole match, which was, like, you know, losing 15 minutes, or...
Do you find that to be true?
I don't, because you will get disabused of that desire incredibly quickly.
Because you know that if you did, you'd be wasting 100% of your time, because you'd reset so many times, right?
Well, you just can't be successful doing that. If you run your guys out there without being in Overwatch...
Oh, I thought you meant press reset on the level.
Well, what I'm saying is you will never send one guy way out by himself, ever.
There's no scouts.
I mean, there are assault guys who can tank hard and have, you know, like melee bonuses and like close range fighters, but... You would never send them out there without having, like, a sniper back in support. So what I think that you don't get with... what you don't get, I assume, with the demo is... Maybe you should describe what the demo is to me.
The demo's, like, the tutorial level and the first level after that.
Do you do any of the in-base stuff, or is it all...
And then you get to a base, and you get to do, like, one or two things, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't make it that far. I only got through the very first mission, which is completely tutorial.
The first one is all, like, no choices. And then the first real one you do is, like, you going and finding some aliens, like, walking around those truck crate things, those boxes, what do you call those?
Shipping containers.
Like barrels and shipping containers, and you're on it like a dock, and there's a building, and there's a ladder. You could put one guy on top of that first like diner or whatever's at the beginning, and then later inside you can go up a ladder onto a little balcony inside a larger like warehouse or something. But even that one map, it felt like it was designed like there's a route over to the right and to the left. Should I send like one or two dudes out to the right to flank whatever I'm going to find and the rest of them to the left? Or should I keep them all in one pack? And I was like, well, if I send them independently, they might just get owned. Like you said, that's probably a bad strategy. But then why is the map even designed like that?
So if you send
and
dudes...
if I keep them all together, then there aren't nearly enough, like, there aren't five good cover points as I proceed, always.
Yeah.
Like, somebody has to have terrible cover or be out in the open. And, like, I don't know, I just didn't like all the choices they gave me on the map that they gave me.
So, there is Fog of War, definitely. And if you hate Fog of War, you know, that's your problem. There's Fog of War, right? At least half the game... is not even in that. The half of the game is like base management, economy management decisions. You're spending a ton of time in base, choosing what to research in your labs, choosing what to build. You have a whole like base building part of it. So you're like excavating in your home base to build more sections. You need to manage like power consumption at the base. You're managing a whole economy based on keeping the member nations, keeping their panic level down so that they're still contributing funds to this kind of worldwide effort. So that whole part of it is, I find that really enjoyable. You know, you're just making a lot of decisions and trying to, you know, be a good steward of the funds that they send you and pick out, okay, what's going to be most valuable. I have the option to, you know, I can create some benefits for my guys and give them bonuses as they level up, or I can, you know, build a new workshop over here and get additional scientists that allow me to research faster. And, you know, so you're managing all that stuff. When you're in the combat missions, you are, as you say, so you can basically what you have to do is manage your guys. If you want to keep them all clumped up, you will learn that keeping them all clumped up is bad, right? You don't want them all clumped up, but you also don't want them super spread out either. Essentially, you need to support guys. You need to have your guys in support of each other. And what you probably don't get in the demo, I think, is any of the leveling up of your characters, because that part is when it gets super interesting. And I think you would actually really like it because it has a lot in common with a Mass Effect build, right? Each one of your guys will get a class as you play it. I don't know if they had that in the demo, but you'll get like there's a heavy weapons guy, an assault guy, a sniper, a support.
Yeah, one of them they give you as a support, and one of them can like run and gun, and one of them can't, but like has a rocket launcher. And,
so each of those has a whole skill tree as they level, and their leveling up is promotions, right? So they start out as a squaddy, or they start out as a recruit, and then their first level is squaddy, and then it's like, you know, whatever, all those military ranks, lieutenant, major, colonel, captain.
Right? Yeah, I promoted one guy, and the options were like, give him more offense or give him more defense or something.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a ton of those options, and they get really exciting and interesting and really turn into something like a Mass Effect build, right? You'll have... an option, you'll have these really well-balanced, well-designed trade-offs between... So the support guys, you can kind of track them down a field medic type of role where, you know, one of the options is instead of using a med kit one time, you're a better medic, so you can get three applications out of it. But that's balanced against being able to use these smoke grenades in a more effective way that cover more of your guys. And so it's like, how do I want to spec the support guy? It's just really enjoyable. I find managing, you know, the types of guys that I'm going to take on the mission really fun, relevant to Mass Effect in that sense as well. Like, you know, who's going to go on this mission with me? Which six people am I going to take? Which classes do I think I'm going to need on this mission?
So it sounds super...
That's a lot like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah. It sounds super interesting. I listened to the Giant Bomb guys talk about it for a while, and I was like, yeah, what they're saying sounds really interesting. But it's just one of those things that, like, it has a long learning curve. Not a really steep one, just a really long one. Like, remember when we played that board game that took, like, 6 hours with the ships? What was that called?
The Greek one?
No.
You mean the dungeoning one?
No, the spaceships. Where you got a little...
Alien Frontier?
Yeah, I think so.
No, the six-hour one where you...
Oh.
With John, where you like have an economy and
yeah, yeah.
you like build out all your ship. Like,
yeah.
Anyway.
I don't remember the name of that, but yeah.
Anyway, it's like one of those 6-hour board games where it takes you like 2 hours of someone just like teaching you the ins and outs of it. And then it takes you playing through the whole first session to even learn what you did and did well or badly. And then if you start it over, then you might start enjoying it. It's one of those. It's like in my head, it is
mm-hmm.
like eventually I might start getting into this. But if I didn't like the basic, like, move this guy to attack that much,
yeah.
and the basic, like, move this guy from that grid square to that grid square and then tell him to shoot, I thought that was all right. I wasn't super into it. Then, you know, I wasn't super into it.
If I had,
like, invested $60 into it and then really committed a whole afternoon
yeah.
to playing, like, the first several missions, maybe I'd get super into it. But at this point, I think that's a risk that I might not enjoy it that much.
The part that's... So, yeah, you know, I think it's I don't know how well it's selling, so it may well be pretty cheap around Thanksgiving and Black Friday stuff, so that might be a good time to pick it up. The part that's fun is less the... It's not move this guy and tell him to shoot. It's like tell your sniper guy to be on Overwatch and recognize that your sniper guy is going to get to take a free shot if somebody moves, and then... run your assault guy out and use his special ability that assault guys can choose an ability called flush, which they take a free shot that has a high chance to hit, does very low damage, but forces an enemy, it flushes them out and forces them to move. And then that when he moves through your sniper's vision, that guy gets to take a shot, and like setting up these big kind of chain reactions where you can take out like 4 guys in a round because you have, you know, certain guys set up to be support, certain guys, you know, doing these, you know, frontal actions. And it's that part is what's enjoyable, right? It's like planning out the
awesome.
Whole strategy.
That's yeah. pretty awesome. A couple basic questions. If you did that scenario and your sniper guy like with Overwatch has like excessively long range, I would assume.
He has very long range, and they can spec an ability that allows them to shoot outside of their vision into the to basically gain the vision of any member of your squad. So... You can leave a sniper
crazy.
Way back, and as long as one of your guys has vision, they can fire into that vision.
So if you don't have that yet, and you do that tactic,
yeah.
and then you don't find any enemies, and then you have to move your whole team way far forward,
mm-hmm.
and your sniper guy's like way behind everybody else,
mm-hmm.
do you have to like waste a whole turn just sending the sniper guy all the way up to the rest of the group, and having the whole rest of the group like sit there for a minute? And then take the whole group up to the next area to get a good sniper point again, and to
you will definitely have to do that.
It seems like there's a lot of like wasted turns, and
well, there
it's
aren't
kind of
really
slow.
Wasted turns because the you know if you get to the point where like your sniper's so far back and he like or that you can't really happen once you get that vision perk, but if your guy that doesn't work through floors of buildings, so if they go upstairs, that doesn't work, right? So you might that scenario could arise where you wanted to get your sniper up a level or move him around. It's usually because you've moved your front ranks forward far enough to take out several guys, and you'll have a turn where you need to reload, right? So there's ammo, and so you know while those guys are reloading, you can relocate your sniper and move him up.
Interesting. Right?
So it keeps it flowing pretty well. The There is a mission that's like that I got to, which is the first kind of major story beat. Like, it's like the first third of the game, I'm assuming. You know, you're taking over like an alien main base, right? You get to find one of their main bases and go through it. So that one, you have to be super, super careful. And I'm really playing this game forcing myself not to reload. There have been times when I've reloaded.
There's
missions.
A setting that doesn't allow
there
you
is
to,
a
right?
heart like a insanity mode or
yeah,
hardcore
you done
or whatever.
That.
Yeah, I wasn't. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not that hardcore.
It's called self-control.
But yeah, I am. I am trying to not reload a bunch of times, and you know, like perfect every mission. And I'm trying to, you know, if I fuck up and send a guy out there without, you know, sufficient support, and he eats it in one round, which can definitely happen, then I try to just let that go. So,
have you had countries pull out?
I have not had countries pull out because the thing is. I understand, like, I've listened to the Bombcast on that, too, and I was paying attention. Like, I think they just weren't paying attention to their country's panic levels, right? Maybe they just didn't notice they were all into, like, doing the research and the engineering stuff, and they weren't paying attention to that side of things, but I was able to manage that and didn't really have any difficulty, and
interesting. More XCOM? We can move on.
Yeah.
Can we? Are you sure? I thought you said you had questions.
Do your shit, Mike.
Another game that I just played, because I was looking through the app, the Genius part of the App Store, and it was recommending stuff to me, which I do every once in a while when I'm just like really bored and want something new. It brought me to Electromaster for iOS, obviously. So this is a really interesting random game that I've never heard anything about, and I subscribe to a lot of RSS feeds for Apple stuff, and I see a lot of apps go by that I completely ignore.
Maybe you completely ignored this one.
Maybe. This is a really... I'm trying to describe what... It's a very simple game. It's like an arcade game. It's like an old arcade game you would play in the 80s. The text they use looks like that text. It seems like it's either intentionally translated weird... there's very little text, like in between missions or levels. There's some text that's horribly translated, bad grammar. Not sure if that's intentional or not. Anyway, the actual gameplay is you've just got a dude. It's actually a girl. And you've got enemies around you. It's almost like a kind of Robotron-esque. And at first, there was no tutorial. I had absolutely no idea what I was supposed to do. So I just moved my person around. I thought maybe I was supposed to touch the bad guys, but no, you're supposed to kill them. You're supposed to shoot them. And you do that by holding by tapping and holding your character, which you can still move as you're doing that. But as you tap and hold, this electrical field like builds up on them. And when you let go of tapping, they shoot that laser in whatever direction that they're pointing. And I think depending on how long you hold it down is how long they shoot, anywhere from like a split second to like a second and a half or something like that. And basically all you're doing is they just increase the number of enemies that are on the screen, and sometimes they get bigger or sometimes they get harder, and you're just supposed to blast them. Like, it's a super simple, like, kill everything on the screen that was incredibly addictive, and I just wanted to play it, and I made it through like 15 levels of normal difficulty. There's an easy, normal, hard, like ridiculous, and then like phantasm. Like, I have no idea.
And describe this more.
This is in real time, is not turn based?
No, it's real time. Like I said, it's like Robotron.
Is it really fast?
Do enemies come at you?
They seemingly kind of walk randomly around the screen, but after about 6 or 7 levels, there's so many of them that they basically surround you. When you first start a level, you get about a second to 2 seconds of invulnerability so that they don't immediately hurt you. But you basically, it's a total Twitch game. You have to like immediately start killing everything.
How do you control the character?
Like I said, you tap and hold your character and you move it around the screen.
You just move with your finger.
You just move it around the screen, and as...
Does it follow where your finger is, or is it always directly under your finger?
I think it's directly under your finger. It's like you're pushing your dude around.
Okay.
I think. And then when you let go, whichever direction you were last, you know, facing is where they shoot. But I realized this accidentally, that even after you let go, you can then tap again and change the direction of the laser blast. And so that's how I accidentally ended up figuring out that you can shoot all around you really quickly to like kind of do, you know, an area of effect shot like around you, which helped immensely because when there was like 500 guys around you and it wasn't enough to just shoot in one direction.
Because he's unloading like a machine gun of bullets, and then
it's a laser really, but yeah.
But like a series of laser blasts.
It is a continuous laser beam that then dies.
And when you swirl around while he's still shooting that,
the laser
second,
moves it with
like
you.
Goes sweeps.
So it's a laser turns on for 2 seconds.
Like a flamethrower.
Right, and depending on which way you're moving or you're facing, it shoots that way. And it just keeps getting harder and harder and harder. And like I said, I got to like level 15 or 16, and it just got too overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how many levels there are.
Is it free? Is it
99 cents? It was free. It's a free
nice.
Game.
Electromaster.
Awesome.
So really random, fun, crazy Twitch game that I've never heard of that seems like a weird like Japanese import that no one knows about.
Sounds good.
Try that.
Check it out. Yes, you should check it out on your iOS device.
No, I'll use your thing.
Okay.
As soon as you're done.
With this fucked up podcast.
Your little computing slate right there.
Yeah, it's my computing slate. Okay, so also in the Indie Royale Fall Bundle was this little tiny game that's getting absolutely no press at all by anyone called To the Moon. And by that, I mean it's actually getting a lot of press, and the only reason why I was even interested in it is because I heard a million things about it. I heard that it was really good, and I played it all the way through. It took me about 4 hours, and it actually was really good. I immediately asked these guys, Josh and Chaz, whether they had played it, and Josh had played some of it, and Chaz had not played any of it. And I immediately implored them to play it, because I think it's a really unique game that is... There's really not a lot of games that are like this, and I think it's more well done than maybe Josh thinks. Although I will say my main issues with it are that the dialogue does try too hard sometimes. It does try to be funny when it's not really being funny. It's weird because the game in general is really more dramatic and emotional, and so when they try to kind of lighten the mood with jokes, it doesn't really work very well. And also, it's probably not necessary for it to be a game. The actual game part of it is kind of dumb and annoying, and or at least, if not annoying, just not engaging. Almost like those are the parts of the game that I just kind of wanted to speed through to get to the story. So,
a la Asura's Wrath.
Yeah. Kinda, yeah. It might have been even better if they had just eschewed the game and just made it like... You know,
a novel with art,
a visual
an
novel,
illustrated book,
right? But even then, like, I don't think any of the game play is enough to warrant like dismissing it. It's just not its strength. So
what's good about it?
The story. It's an engaging, emotional story that just doesn't happen in games.
So if it were a book, what genre would it be?
Romantic tragedy.
Except sort of sci-fi-ish, because it made me think of...
Sci-fi setting.
Sci-fi-ish.
It made me think of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, because it has a very similar, like...
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
Thought science, you know, like...
that shit is also really depressing.
Like messing with memories and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's not the most uplifting thing, although the reason
Don't spoil by saying how uplifting it is.
Yeah, well, I will just say the whole thing is not a depressing, like... It's not, yeah... I think Josh only got through the part that was depressing and assumed it was completely depressing. But anyway, I think everybody should play it. It really doesn't take that long to get through, and it was very engaging. I wanted to see the story all the way through, despite the kind of middling gameplay.
So I don't think it was bad. I played about halfway through. I don't know how long it is.
Josh thought it was long after 2 to 3 hours.
It takes place like over negative time, like Memento or something, right? It's kind of like
it goes back
in time sequentially, right? And I got apparently about halfway across the timeline. Okay. So I assume I'm halfway through the game. Mm-hmm. And it felt to me like at least an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe halfway through. Anyway, the story's interesting. The story does some neat things. It's very unique for a game as far as a game story. Like, it's this... it's hard to describe. It's like a... romantic tragedy time travel, right? Like it's pretty, it's cool, it's a unique story, right? But what you said is my problem with it, which is it doesn't need to be a game. Like, I was playing it thinking this gameplay part is annoying, like, why? I don't want to do this. I just want to read the whole story in a book or watch the whole thing in a movie. I should probably just go watch the whole thing on YouTube like you did with Catherine.
Yeah, I would be
like,
okay with that.
I would probably have a better experience by just watching this whole game on YouTube, even though I own it, right? Thank you. Because the gameplay is really subpar. It's like, it plays like an old RPG like Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy, except it plays like one of the bad ones in terms of the actual control.
Yeah.
Like, even Chrono Trigger,
it's pretty bad.
Let you like walk around, to my memory, it let you walk around trees, I think, by like bumping into one and then sliding around it.
Mm-hmm.
This one, like,
I'm not sure it did.
Like
that.
If you, maybe it was the ones after it.
Some of them did.
Maybe
that one,
Mario RPG or something.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was, but at least it was a 10 like year ago advancement.
Yeah, yeah.
In RPG,
there's
control.
Really no excuse for it to be.
This was one of the ones
bad,
where
yeah.
you hit a tiny little like rock that you didn't even see on the ground. You're like, I thought that was like a grass or a bush I could walk through, and you literally you can't move forward. You have to change your direction dramatically to the left or right to get around.
Dramatically.
It's a hassle. But because I'm constantly like running into things and can't just fucking navigate the landscape without hassling over which direction I'm moving the character, like all the time. Like you said, it's one of my nitpicky, like,
I was just gonna say, this is like the this is the anti game for Josh, because it is not about the gameplay
right.
at all.
And then, when
it's horrible,
the only other part of the gameplay is like walking up to things that you're trying to find and pressing A a lot. So you're doing that really old RPG where you're like spamming A while running around and bumping into everything you can, just trying to find the thing that right. triggers the dialogue, right? And then the other gameplay part is like this puzzle where you flip tiles. That's actually okay. If it were a puzzle game where you flip tiles, I would play that on my phone. And so every time I got to one of those, I was actually like, okay, I'll play this puzzle flip game.
So I actually hated
except it doesn't fit in the game at all. Like, because it gets you out of the story, and you're like, I just wanted to see the story, not do the puzzle game. If this were just a 100% puzzle flipping tile, like, phone game, I would play it, but it's not. Like, why is this here? Anyway, story is super cool. I appreciate it. I recommend watching the whole thing on YouTube.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go with that, too. Like, nice. There's nothing about the game that really needs
that
to be played.
That is rewarding.
Yeah, but the story was really good, and...
Cool.
Yeah. I didn't cry, but I was close. So, those are really the only games I want to play, but I did want to... I wanted to do a shout-out, and this is where I get to prattle on about something that you guys don't really care about for the next 20 minutes. Really, only two. So, I mentioned it before...
1/10 the boredom.
Yeah, I'm saving you guys. I'm being nice. This is a gift. So I've mentioned it before, probably, maybe not by name, but there's this application on iOS. So it's on the iPhone, it's on the iPad universally, and it's also on Windows and Mac called Nano Studio. So I've been doing a lot of sketching lately, music-wise. I mentioned I'm doing a game project. I'm still working on that. Going to be working on that for a while. This software is great. Like, actually, a coworker of Josh's keyed me in on it. I visited him at work one day, and he has a friend who is also a musician, and he was playing around with this on his iPad. And I'm like, holy shit, this thing is sweet. I should get this. I didn't get it right away, but I did get it later.
Because it's like $30?
It's $15 on iOS, yeah. Okay. So it's not the kind of app that you just buy and don't think about. Like, if you aren't at least moderately into making music, you don't give a shit about this app. But if you do, I highly recommend it, even though it's $15. I think it's probably worth twice that. And it's free on Windows and Mac. Like, it's free. It's the same thing, plus... the $4.99 additional unlock for more tracks, because the original one only comes with 5 tracks on iOS, like 5 different tracks that you can sequence on. You got to pay $4.99 for 10 more. So it's $20 for the full thing on iOS. All of that is free on Windows and Mac, so which is ridiculous.
Is it free on computers because compared to its competition on computers, it's inferior? And if you tried it there, and even if you liked it, and even if you started making projects... you could then, you know, continue your project on the go, but you'd have to buy it for iPhone. So they think it's like an advertisement, because not many people are going to use it just dedicated on a.
It's weird because I bought it on iOS and I didn't know for a long time that it was available on Windows and Mac. Because I use Logic, which is like a $200 program. This is not an app that I would buy on the desktop when I know Logic exists, because it's like the standard,
right?
You know, it's sort of like the iMovie to Final Cut Pro, you know. But for free, it's amazing. And the fact that you can work on your phone or your iPad and then move it to your computer. Yeah, so I sync everything everywhere, so I can basically use this program wherever I want. It's a great little audio sketch tool. The interface is really well done. There's some parts about the interface and the features it has that are better than the $200 Logic Pro. Like,
nice.
Logic Pro could learn a few things from this app. And this app is written by one dude. Like, one guy made this whole thing, which is kind of insane because it's pretty deep.
Say its name again.
It's called Nano Studio.
Yeah.
And the guy who made it is named Matt Borstel. Yeah. And he had, I mean, this is not like his first programming project ever, but it's his first iOS project. So he didn't come from nothing to make it, but he didn't have a track record. And it's amazing.
No pun intended.
Right. Yeah. So I've been using it lately to make songs or little sketches that I'll eventually flesh out using Logic. I think you could make full songs on it if you really tried.
You should write a version of the show theme using it.
I may have already started that.
Nice.
Yeah, so it comes with a synth, and you can use samples. You can load your own samples. It comes with a drum machine, and it has several kits that you can use. I don't know. Everything you would want in kind of the basic sequencing electronic music software cool. world, it does. And
nice.
I highly recommend it. Just want to do a shout out. If he ever listens, or anybody, musicians out there, go buy his shit. Also, one album that just came out. I mentioned this guy named Shnabubala before, because that's a great name.
Great name.
He did that album where he basically did songs in the style of Super Nintendo games using the instrumentation. Well, he just put out something completely different called Fading Light, which is actually a series of solo piano pieces. And he is a goddamn, like piano virtuoso. Like, these are, like, really good songs, and I would, you know, never be able to play these, like, even if I, like, practiced for years. Like, he's that good. And it kind of goes from, like, somber to really upbeat and, you know, happy and sunny. So I think it's free, or pay what you want, but you should probably give him money because it's really good.
Yeah, it's on Bandcamp. I listened to the one, the track that you linked a week ago or whenever it was, mm-hmm. and liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was surprisingly good. I didn't really know what to expect when I just heard piano. I was like, oh, this, you know, I mean, I like piano, but because I don't play, I'm not as into just solo piano stuff, because I really like solo guitar stuff because I can listen to it and think about how it's made and maybe even think about playing it. But when I hear piano, I know I'll never be able to play anything. So I'm always kind of removed from how the sausage is made, I guess. And now that I've been doing it for so long, I really am interested in stuff that I can figure out. And I think sufficiently complicated stuff sometimes almost frustrates me, and I don't like it as much because I can't figure it out and I really want to. Which is kind of a curse, actually.
That is a total curse.
It is.
My favorite thing is coming upon something that I could never do. Like, if I think I could do something, I'm inherently less impressed and less interested in it. But if it's something that I know I could never do, like watching a basketball game, right? I will never be that much of a virtuoso with my body as an NBA player.
But you could play basketball.
Not like that. Like, it's a different thing. And that's impressive to me, as you know, or people doing extremes of athletics in any, like, pole vault is fucking unbelievable. Or fucking, you know, 8 foot high jump. The high jump record is right. 8 feet.
Right.
8 feet. It's like 8 feet and 3 inches.
Wait, eight? You mean like eight? Like more than seven?
That is mind boggling. Absolutely bizarre. So anyway, yeah, I have totally the opposite sense of it, that, if I think I could do it, I'm like, eh, whatever, I could probably do that.
That exact same reason is the reason I don't spend a huge amount of time creating music.
Mm-hmm.
Because the music I like the best is the kind I can't fully grasp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's fine. But yeah, it's not that I don't like really complicated stuff, but I think I just get frustrated because I am trying to figure it out and I can't. Whereas not just listening to it and being starstruck.
That is true. If I think I should be able to do something but can't, then I hate that thing and don't want anything to do with it. And that is Scrabble for me. I think I should be good at Scrabble.
There
and
you
I am not, and so I hate Scrabble.
Right. Yes. And you don't that's necessarily true. Want to watch, like, world-class Scrabble being played.
No, I kind of would.
Okay.
I just wouldn't want to play Scrabble myself because I think I should be good at it, but it turns out I'm not. Like, making a word out of a random jumble of letters, I have to literally sit down and go systematically. Like I have to brute force my way through Scrabble. I just can't look at a pile of letters and go, oh, that's a word, that's a word, that's a word. Anyway,
that's been my week.
Nice. Cool.
Very nice.
Sounds like you both had good weeks. Mm-hmm. Real briefly, just on XCOM, the one other thing about it, it has some poor inventory management UX. It's really my one complaint about the game is the, I don't know, whoever did the UX on just that one part of it did a really bad job. Each individual guy, as I mentioned, goes up in levels. You also give them a loadout of different weapons, you know, armor, this piece of, like, separate equipment that they can take. So they have, you can either take like a grenade or smoke grenades or a med kit or a scope that fits on your rifle and gives you better accuracy or whatever, these like accessory items. Well, you have to build those items, and there are, you know, it uses resources to do that. But there's no like, there's the system for managing that is bad. They don't go into a pool, right? So there's, or they do it when you first make them, but as soon as you assign them to a guy, you make it part of their loadout, it sticks with them. So, which is annoying because the game really rewards you for swapping guys in and out of your squad on a regular basis, because you don't want to just invest heavily in one set of dudes, because a dude can really get taken out at any time. So if you, you're bringing people in and out of your party often, and of course you don't want to overbuild items so that everyone can have one of everything, right? You're really trying to be lean with your money because money is such a scarce resource. So you have to, basically you have to assign a guy into your party, go into his loadout, swap out the thing you want for some other thing, delete him from your party, add the different guy who you actually want to take, go into his loadout and add the item. It's just a really annoying set of steps. And then what also happens is if one of you guys gets injured but not killed on the mission and is wounded and is not available for a particular mission, you have to, you know, you'll have a squad of, you know, 20 guys up to literally 100 guys that you can have in your barracks. And you have to like remember or go through each individual guy to find who had the stupid like sniper scope that you wanted. It's really annoying and just a terrible solution. I can't believe it didn't come up in testing. UX people, do it. Anyway.
Let me tell you this real quick thing that Guild Wars does along those lines. Guild Wars 2. When you're out and about questing and gathering all kinds of items, and then and if you salvage items into like components, then you have all these like crafting materials and components and stuff. And like most, like all MMOs basically make you take a trip to town, go to the bank, like put stuff in the bank.
Except for Torchlight.
Sell stuff. Like, or yeah, Torchlight is not exactly an MMO, but yes, it does that workaround that's awesome where you send the pet to do that shit. But you mostly send the pet to sell. You still have to go to town to put stuff in your bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what Guild Wars 2 does is you click the menu in the corner that says deposit all collectibles. And then everything that's like a component of crafting or whatever, a crafting material, it all just automatically goes to your bank collection.
Nice.
And so you can be out and about like almost forever without going back to your bank. And then when you eventually do want to go craft, you don't have to go pull all your materials out of your bank. You can just go to a crafting station and it automatically uses all the materials that you have in your collection in your bank to craft. Nice. And then you craft something and it pops up in your inventory.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It's so good. It's just like, I don't know. It seems like such an easy fix too.
It's super easy because it's like, where does it look for the inventory? It looks in everyone's inventory.
Yeah.
Like, no. It only looks in like this one spot.
Right. So in XCOM, they could easily have said, you know, here's the pool of all the items you have among XCOM, not just every item that isn't assigned. Just have that inventory management be every item you've made.
It could be a toggle switch.
Yeah, and then if you're going to assign something that's assigned to somebody else, pop up a little thing. This is currently assigned to this guy. Are you sure you want to put it
on
this one?
It's the type of thing that they might not have even thought of, or they might have had on the list and it was low priority, that if it were like this continually supported thing, they might easily just patch it.
That would be sweet if they patch it.
But for a console game that may or may not be selling well, it seems less likely for them to patch that in.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, so that was that. I mentioned a game on the show a while ago called Agent Dash, and it's an infinite runner, and we had a discussion about it, and I want to get you guys to give that game another shot, because it quietly became one of my most played mobile games. It's really...
It's on Android?
Yeah, it's on Android.
Oh, this is the 3D one.
Yeah.
Does it require a Tegra?
I don't think so. I think it looks better on Tegra, maybe. But I'm not sure. Anyway, it's really good. It's just got great controls with a surprising level of finesse, right? That it does touch controls very well. It's an infinite runner in the style of the old Crash Bandicoot games, where you're behind the character. There are three lanes which you can swipe between. Obstacles come at you from above, below, to the sides. You're jumping and ducking below things. You can also always combine those moves. So you could, for example, jump in the air and swipe to the side and move over a lane while you're in the air, or move over two lanes. So there's a lot of finesse to the controls. The animation is super cute, super fluid. It runs at 60 frames per second on the Nexus 7. The character animation is really good. Each of the characters has really nice, cool, fluid, like idle and run and jump and slide animations that are unique from character to character. The difficulty ramp is very good. It's not one of those games where a lot of these infinite runners feel like they're quarter munchers without being quarter munchers, like for no reason. Whereas this game really lets you get quite a ways in and feel like you're really accomplishing something before it starts getting too hard. And I have, by playing it more and more, I have continually been able to progress, and I haven't felt yet like I've hit a wall. And I've actually probably played this game for like 6 or 8 hours or something at this point. I've unlocked a lot of characters. It does have one hit death, and we've talked about how that's a bad thing in infinite runners. But, you know, in thinking about that, first of all, I don't mind one hit death if you feel like the one hit death is building towards some other goal. And, you know, you're constantly collecting these gems, which allow you to buy things that you can upgrade your character with and get more capabilities.
I disagree. That's not the key for me. I'm only okay with one hit death if I feel like it was totally fair.
Yeah.
Right? And not, like, randomized, and not like, fuck, I totally pressed that and the input failed.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The like, I'm doing this 10 times and dying, but at least I'm gaining, like, coins every time I do it, that are XP that's eventually going to unlock something. I feel like that's a more artificial way to make the death less important, yeah, or whatever. Like, I kind of don't like that. That's one of the difference that we never got into between Super Crate Box and this imitator called Muffin Knight.
Obviously.
because Super Crate Box didn't get ported to mobile super fast, uh-huh, so somebody else made a mobile game that's on iOS, or Android, and it's on Chrome Web Store now, huh, on PC. And Chrome Web Store on a PC with an Xbox controller using like XPad or something like that is actually the best way to play it.
And playing it on iOS is balls.
Don't do it. Super shit. It's on, total on mobile, shit.
And if that's your own, much like Chaz, we were talking about the Lego games, and you said your only real exposure to it was on the DS, which, right, was like the worst way. This is sort of equivalent. It like completely ruins the game for you if that's the only way you experience it.
So Muffin Knight is almost exactly like Super Crate Box. They're like virtually identical. It copied almost everything.
Except
about
you're a muffin?
It. Except the
I
art.
Think you're at the knight, probably.
Trying to get muffins?
Wait, is it muffin N-I-G-H-T or K-N-I-G-H-T?
K-N.
It's like the knight of the muffins.
Are you a muffin?
No, you're gathering muffins.
Oh.
It's like high priority as the
as muffins are in real life.
Your mission
disregard
for the king.
Disregard money, acquire muffins.
Your mission for the king is to acquire muffins for your troops or something. Anyway, it does a few things. It almost does everything it does differently. It almost does objectively better. Like the graphics are colorful, higher res. It has XP, it has progression, it has like you unlock all this shit,
mm-hmm,
or you get all these points for doing well, so that even when you die, like your death doesn't matter that much because you still made progress towards unlocking things. When you spend money, you can upgrade your classes,
mm-hmm,
because instead of just your weapon changing, your whole character changes every time you get a muffin.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be like a ninja or like a pumpkin head or something, and you like upgrade your ninja to throw extra,
gotcha,
ninja stars,
yep,
or something. Yep. So it's got all these features. It's got like way more levels. It's got all these things that sound objectively better, except I hate it. I think it's terrible because, and Super Crate Box is way better because the basic difference is that when you're playing Muffin Knight, the death doesn't matter because you're always getting like you're progressing and you're like half thinking about the challenge and the mechanic of the game, and you're half thinking about just unlocking the next thing and doing like this Japanese RPG grind. Mm-hmm. This bullshit, like, just press A a million times grind.
So it's not
right?
that the deaths feel unfair?
It's not
like
that,
that
the
they're random or something?
The deaths do feel unfair. That's true, too. But the XP in that game is actually detracts from the game, because when that system isn't there in Super Crate Box, you are 100% focused on getting a high score and doing really well mm-hmm. in the interface. And the interface is like more, it's tighter and
it's
better.
It's more minimal, yeah.
You know, it's more, in that case, less is more,
yeah.
You know. And I'm not saying that's the same for this game. Yeah, it just made me want to bring it up.
Yeah, so Agent Dash actually does a good job of incentivizing you in both senses. You can do much better with the gems as you use them to improve your characters and your character and their ability or unlock other characters. It also incentivizes you to get a high score in individual runs and you know, be a top leaderboards and that kind of thing. So I think it does a good job balancing those. And just, you know, on the one-hit death thing, Pac-Man had one-hit death, right? Like, Q-Bert, I think, is one-hit death. A lot of those early arcade games are one-hit death, but you had three lives. But somehow, one-hit death with infinite lives, as all these infinite runners are, is worse than that somehow. I don't know. I recall us bringing up the one-hit death thing.
It's kind of the difference between starting at level one or not, though. In Pac-Man, you still resume on world four or mm-hmm. whatever with your three lives.
Yeah. And in this case, you resume on, you know, you resume at the start of the track where you can continue to hone your skills. You know, I think it's just, anyway, I think it's worth giving another shot. I don't think, Mike, I doubt you'll probably still won't like it. But,
yeah. I mean, besides the reasons I gave on our previous podcast about why I don't like infinite runners, I'm not sure what else I could come up with that, like, I don't know. What you just said doesn't nullify how I feel about those things.
Yeah, understood.
So, it doesn't matter how well made the game is if it still falters on those ideas. And the I think it's just the general gameplay of most infinite runners just is not. It feels shallow. It doesn't. It's not very. It's not engaging to me.
This is quite an engaging, surprisingly finesse driven game. But it is ultimately an infinite runner.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's crept up on me. I didn't expect it. I thought it was going to be a throwaway. And I think, you know, the way I talked about it on the other show was like, oh yeah, it's pretty good for an infinite runner. I think this is a very good game.
It works really well on my phone, apparently. So I'll try it.
Yeah, check it out. Ann Coulter totally got owned by a guy with Down syndrome.
Oh my God, that was great. Oh my God.
It was so great.
Is it really that hard to own Ann Coulter, though?
Kind of.
I mean, isn't she kind of...
I debated actually even bringing this up. Because I want to give her as little publicity as possible, and I know that she does what she did on purpose. I know that it is her whole deal is to be deliberately offensive and therefore get, you know, she attacked the 9/11 widows. She just like amazingly offensive things. That's her MO, is just like say something incredibly offensive, get a bunch of air and radio play, and sell more books and get more TV appearances by virtue of doing that. So I really hate that. I think she's completely despicable. But the defense that this guy gave is so eloquent, so, you know, just beautifully written. And
it is really
moving.
Good.
Yeah. We'll link it. I'm not going to read it here, but definitely go to the show notes. It's so good.
To put it in a different context, it's almost wasted on Ann Coulter.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't really have any feelings about her because I don't really follow anything that she does. But
she's like the female Rush Limbaugh.
Right. So,
do you have feelings about Rush Limbaugh?
I think she's worse than Rush.
Well, I mean, it's almost like us just... Okay, I'm just saying I'm not a fan of Rush Limbaugh, but it's one of those things where, like, he's like a known quantity that is... He's like a known quantity of shit in a can. Like, is going up and eloquently saying, Rush Limbaugh is really shit in a can. Like, what does that accomplish?
Is there anybody like that you do have negative feelings towards more so than Rush or Ann Coulter?
It's sort of like with what you said before, Josh, that you don't really understand, like, anger. Like, I don't really get off on putting people that are stupid in their place.
Okay.
Like telling Ann Coulter that she's an idiot. I mean, okay.
Here's the part that...
I mean, good job.
Okay, so here's the part where we differ in our opinions about Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter.
Okay.
I don't, like, feel compelled to call them stupid. What really, really gets under my skin is other people that listen to them and believe them.
Yeah.
And trust them. Right. And I know people that do. I know people that listen to Rush and think he's right.
Mm-hmm.
Or the equivalent. Like, watch Fox News and think what they're saying is news.
Right.
Right? Not opinion. Or think that, when yeah. Bill O'Reilly says that he's not conservative, that, you know,
right.
that he's being honest. You know, it's little things like that. I know people that do that. And when those people get away with it, I feel like it's them committing a crime. And when they're getting away with, like, lying and being despicable people and propagating hate, and then other people I know personally, or at least if not personally, then I know a lot of people in the country. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my fellow countrymen listen to them, believe them, like, maybe get hate propagated through them, right? That bothers the shit out of me. And so I don't see this as, like, enjoying calling them stupid. I see it as the, like, justice, like them getting what they deserve for, like, propagating.
Also, and if Ann Coulter would now be like, oh man, you know, you're right, I shouldn't call people retards, then maybe I'd feel better. But I'm pretty sure her opinion is not going to change, and
it isn't. But
you know,
I think the value.
That's why I feel like it's wasted.
The value, as Josh says, is it. It is wasted. Yeah. You're right. It's wasted.
It's a very good response.
It's
but I don't feel like it has the power that you think it might.
Sometimes it's wasted
on Ann Coulter. Right. It's not wasted on the rest of the country.
Well,
right. It's
hopefully.
Not wasted on everybody else who's using that term, who reads an astonishing, you know, open letter. And what is great about the letter is that there's no vitriol in
right.
the letter.
No, that was good.
Right?
He did not.
It
fall
is actually
to ad hominem.
Quite, it is way more eloquent than I could possibly have written that response. Like, it is a fucking model. Like, it's a lesson to everybody who dislikes Ann Coulter and, you know, would have gone after it in an attacking way. It is not an attack at all. It's like Martin Luther King-esque in its, or Gandhi-esque in the pacifism and the kind of the judo of rhetoric, right? It's total rhetorical judo.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
using the enemy's force against them in the most beautiful way.
It is really great. It is really great. And I don't think it's like completely powerless or whatever. For example, Glenn Beck lost his show on Fox
yes.
News like a day or two after he said something really despicable, and everyone on, like, else, you know, ripped him a new one for it. Crosspoint. Is that the name of the show?
Crossfire
got canceled like days after Jon Stewart went on there and ripped them a new one for like
so great.
For hurting America or yes. whatever. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
how old are you? I'm 38, and you wear a bow tie. You're hurting America.
Although that specific argument is just silly, but it's funny.
Yeah, that was just yeah. funny.
Well, his point was that it was theater. Right.
Well, no. I don't know. I guess I'm just more cynical, and maybe, you know, I'm glad you guys aren't as cynical. But I mean, yeah, it's a well-written letter, and I hope it causes change. But I'm cynical that it won't. So, you know, good for him. But I don't have the high expectations that it's somehow, you know, some sermon from the mount that's gonna do much.
It doesn't. It's a multitude of those things that causes change.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
it's,
and also,
like
we said
it's
previously
gradual...
about tweets. Like, we joke about tweets being one voice and not mattering, like votes, right? But in reality, if like a bajillion people retweeted this link of this speech and then read it, and then it got on national news, like rereading mm-hmm. excerpts of it on TV. And then it would, you know, if it just keeps propagating like that, it's possible.
Yeah, I hope it does. I you know, I was just saying that the one point I wanted to add was when you were saying that when you know people that believe Fox News, I think some of the blame, or at least some of the anger, should be towards the people who are believing it, the people who are mindlessly believing it. I mean, the blame is not completely on the person who says a lie or says something hateful. It's also on human beings as free thinkers and individuals to take that, parse it, use your own judgment, and then judge it, and not just like Okay, well, Bill O'Reilly said it, so it must be true. I mean, yeah, it's Bill O'Reilly's fault, but it's kind of the fault of the person who just said whatever Bill O'Reilly says is true. So I guess my anger is not completely at Bill O'Reilly. It's at people who mindlessly believe anything they're told. So
yeah.
You guys shape up too, damn it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Kudos to that guy. That's pretty awesome.
And the last thing, yes, I'll link that in the show notes. Cloud Atlas, yo. I got to see that shit.
You did?
I got to see the media preview of
Cloud
Atlas.
You got to see
Atlas.
T. Hanks.
Oh, man, it's so
Hanksing
good.
It up.
Yes, I saw Tom Hanks in, you know, like 12 different outfits and Halle Berry in 15 different outfits and makeups. And fuck, it's so good. God, I'm so glad this movie is so good. It is like, it's the way I felt when Lord of the Rings came out and it was super great. Like, I was like, yes, they did it. Like, I would have been so disappointed if it wasn't good, but it was good.
We're totally going to a Hobbit preview.
Are you?
We are. Nice. Oh, you can go too if he still has tickets.
No.
He's out? He's done?
10 are covered.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so we'll see.
Cool. I can't wait to go pay money to see this movie again, which I definitely am going to. But yeah, I got, so my work got, gets press passes to all these movies, and so I got to go check it out.
That's awesome, man.
It's really, really good. There have been a number of negative reviews, several negative reviews. Some centered around that basically fall into two camps. One that it doesn't measure up to the book, and the others that that it's too complex and hard to follow. As someone who
both of those arguments are stupid.
They're pretty stupid. Yeah. They're pretty stupid. The measure up to the book thing, it's like, you know, it's 1,000 pages of book being condensed down into a long movie, 3 hours, right? But still not, you're never going to get everything in, right? And right. So if people who are super fanboys, like, it's always fun to say, oh, it's not as good as the book, right? You feel like, oh, my favorite part wasn't in there. And, you know, it's you know, you feel ownership over this thing that you love. And that makes sense. But I felt they did a remarkable job of putting the book on screen and giving credit to it. Not everything can make it in. That's just how it is.
Both those are valid experiences that some people will have. Yeah. You know, if you had read it and you are a little bit disappointed by it, I imagine a handful of people will feel that way. Same thing if you have trouble following it. I imagine there's some people that will feel that way. But I think a number of people will be in the middle and not have either of those issues or complaints.
I literally can't imagine.
A review seems like it should. Sometimes reviews are really personal experiences.
Right.
And sometimes they're like, trying to be objective about the quality of something for the populace.
Do you think, since you can gauge the popularity of this book more than I can, that the majority of people seeing it will have read the book?
No, I doubt it.
Okay, so
it's a relatively obscure book. Yeah. I mean, he's pretty famous, but he's, I don't think it was a bestseller when this book came out. I'm sure that any book he writes now will be, right, just because he has that name recognition.
And what's that guy's name?
David Mitchell. It's a complicated plot. I mean, it's six overlapping stories from the far past to the far future. And, you know, anyway, the acting is great. There's a relatively small cast for as expansive as the book is because they did that thing where they reused the actors throughout the timelines. That's awesome. The makeup and the job that they did with that makeup is amazing, as I've discussed before. The editing and making it all as coherent as they did. I think it's very coherent and easy to follow. I have no doubt that you guys will be completely able to follow it. Having read the book and, you know, I had a better understanding of it, maybe it's a little easier. It's certainly easier, obviously, but I don't think that there's, much trouble following it. They did a great job editing it. The only complaint I had about the craft of it was the sound mix is a little bit hard and like muddled and hard to hear for certain characters. It's only for certain particular characters and this one particular situation. So I know it was intentional, but I think that the sound mixer guy, sound editor, I don't know what that role is called, but
probably two different people.
Well, whoever was doing
two different teams
was, they fell into the trap where they know what's being said, And so they're like, oh, I want to make this part a little unintelligible, like a little bit hard to understand on purpose, right? Because it fits the character, or fits the action of the scene. But they know exactly what's being said, and they have this crystal clear recording of it. So their version of what unintelligible is not the version that somebody who doesn't know what the line of dialogue is, like that person, like they just can't tell what was said, instead of it being like a little garbled. So I don't know. That was a little annoying, just for this one particular character and scene. I really can't imagine anyone seeing it and not finding something to like. You know, I find it's like almost impossible to overall to like actively dislike this movie. I literally don't know anybody who would go in and come out.
You don't
out
think
and
a
say,
lot
like,
of people will be too confused by the multiple story
challenge? Accepted.
Even if you're confused, yeah, I'm gonna fucking hate this thing. Even if you're confused about the exact intricacies of the plot and how like everything interweaves and ties together, I mean, that is possible.
You'll still give it a tomato.
You will absolutely understand the overall themes, and you'll understand each storyline in and of itself. Right. So maybe if you have trouble remembering the whole thing after like 2 hours, like, oh, what was happening? You know, it's cut together pretty fast and it's 6 overlapping storylines. So it is complex as far as movie plots go, but it is nowhere, you know, it's by no means more complex than any of those types of movies.
Is it a Primer?
It's not as complex as Primer. Like, okay. Primer
well,
is
then you're
way,
all right.
way more obtuse if you're yeah. sitting there trying to figure out what the fuck is going on in Primer.
Yeah.
Like, you have no shot until you watch that movie 4 times.
Even shows like Lost, you know, have trained audiences to be able to jump between disparate, complex stories.
It's the action is super awesome. The Wachowski filmed action scenes are rad. There's some rad martial arts. There's, you know, awesome, you know, future weaponry fighting stuff. There's some really hilarious and very, you know... There's a storyline that's directed very deliberately for comedy. There's, you know, Master and Commander type storyline. It's so good. It's like 6 different movies that are all one movie. It's really, really great. I can't recommend it enough. I highly, highly encourage people to go see it because I really want it to do well.
When's it out?
This Friday, I believe. It's this weekend.
Let's fucking see it.
Yeah. It's the other thing that's cool about it is that it is effectively an independent movie. Did you guys know that?
Mm-mm.
So Lana and Andy Wachowski and Tom Twyker apparently all knew that they all liked that book, and it has the reputation of being unfilmable because it is so complex, and they're like, no, fuck it, we're gonna do it. So they like sequestered themselves for 13 months and wrote the screenplay, and then they took the screenplay to David Mitchell and said, we wrote this screenplay, like, literally on spec. They didn't do it with his foreknowledge, and they handed it to him and said, if you like this and if you accept that this is a good way to put your book on screen, we want to try and make the movie. And they got his approval, and, you know, I think he made some edits or had suggestions or whatever. Then they took that script to every studio in Hollywood, and they all turned it away. Every studio said, no, we can't make that. It's unfilmable. It's not going to make any sense. People aren't going to sit through a 3-hour movie. Actually, studios don't really like long movies anyway because you can't show it as many times per day.
Yeah, you get less money.
So they can they feel like they get less money unless it runs for
it's
a
like
really
half
long time.
As much money.
Yeah. Yeah, if
God
it's 90,
Lord of the Rings.
90 versus 3 hours, right? 90 minutes versus 3 hours, half as many showings. So, yeah, so for all these myriad of reasons, every studio said no. And so they went and self-financed. It's like a $150 million independent movie. They went and,
wow.
and got funding from like... These, you know, they literally took like bank loans.
Did they kickstart it?
Yeah, they should have.
Should have kickstarted.
They got funding from like the regional film boards of the different countries in Europe where they shot it, and like all this other stuff.
So what you're saying is it's probably gonna fail catastrophically.
Yeah, there's no way this can ever make money.
This is what I heard about The Master. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about this one?
I mean, I've heard of the movie.
I know of it. Yes.
It's, let's see, Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, Paul
and
Thomas Anderson.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, it's about
by Paul Thomas
Scientology
Anderson.
Guy. L. Ron Hubbard.
Is Philip Seymour Hoffman playing L. Ron Hubbard? And it's
not
about the,
directly. It is
not directly.
Yeah,
it is not
because well, then it would
is,
be
quote Scientology. It's called the cause or something.
Oh,
it's like,
it's not actual.
It's loosely based,
so that they can make up shit
loosely
and not
based.
Get sued or whatever.
I thought it was legitimate.
It's not well. It is, but it's unspoken. Okay. They never say it's Scientology. Okay. He is not
because the Scientologists will come and
because they don't want to get sued.
They will fuck them up.
So maybe it's as close as they could get without getting
that. As I understand it, that's what happened.
All right, that sounds great. Anyway, I really want to see it. It's got nominated for stuff. It's really good.
Yeah,
but it made like $15 million. It was made for like $40 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and a lot of movies like this get made for like $10 million. Mm-hmm. And if it had it, then you know would be profitable. Right. But as is, it seems like a big failure.
Yeah.
And people are apparently blaming this rich lady that funded it. Because I forget her name. I read an article about it. Because she's like the daughter of a famous producer. She's got like a ton of money, and she basically went, "Yeah, I'll give you $40 million to make this," when she probably should have only let it get made for $10 million. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she really wanted to support the art. She liked the script a lot, or whatever. But as a business person, mm-hmm. people like criticize her for not being able to see that this is not the type of movie that could make $40 million back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was a really weird article, but it was super interesting. And now I really want to see The Master just to like support it.
Yeah. Well, Cloud Atlas is super like rollicking blockbuster fun. Like it is straight up fun. It's very emotional. I cried at the end. Like it's just like, it's such a good movie. It's a really good movie. I'm really happy that it's really good. So yeah. That's what happened in my week.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Do we have anything else to talk about?
Grab
DJ
bag.
DJ Max.
You want to do the grab bag real quick?
Yeah, grab bag.
Want to do a couple grab bags?
Let's do a grab bag. Let's do like 2 minutes on each. We'll do like five
I played
of them.
Mark of the Ninja.
Oh, did you?
Just the demo.
Ooh. Shit is sweet.
It's all right.
That's fucking awesome.
And you should listen to the Experience Points podcast, which blows, except this week they've got an interview with the maker of that game, Nels Anderson.
It's one of those.
How long's the demo?
It's one of those really.
Stop playing demos.
It's one of those really well executed ones that I don't really want to play the rest of it.
Oh, it's so good. God damn,
I know it's good. I just wasn't super compelled to continue.
This is the problem. This is
it's the Louis C.K. gluttony of awesomeness.
Yeah,
or
this is like the corollary to my overwhelmment of entertainment, that there's mm-hmm. too much. There's so many even awesome games that are amazing that I just have no interest in playing.
Awesomer.
That's the tragedy of our current. Okay, so roll a thing between 1 and 40. Do it.
Oh,
what?
So we can pick one. Otherwise, I'm going to have to pick one randomly.
I've got...
You don't want that.
I've got 1 in 20. You roll a 1 in 20, and I'll roll, and we'll add it.
Mine's taking a while. Just change yours to 40.
Oh, can I do that? Oh, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, you can.
40. 40. Generate. 29.
Okay. Game controllers over the years.
More buttons. Done. Next.
So Josh definitely feels like there should be more buttons. I don't know. I think there's plenty of fucking buttons on my controller. If I want more buttons, I'll use a keyboard.
Fine with the number of buttons as well.
How about that?
How many more buttons is enough, Josh? When will you be satisfied?
How about that prototype Steam controller with the, like, pull out one of the sticks and put in a trackball?
That's what she said.
Oh, man, I want them to make that.
Or just pull out, you know, it's got 4 modules, 4 analog sticks. Let's
Ooh.
Do it.
And use like
just 2 fingers on each one. Yeah, finger on each middle. One. Yeah.
How about pull out all the sticks and put more buttons in?
Only buttons.
So it's interesting though. Yes. Like I feel like the Xbox controller more so than the PS3 controller has just kind of become like the de facto controller that people think of when they just think of a game controller.
Interestingly, it became the de facto PC gamepad.
Yeah. Well, now, is that just because...
Microsoft drivers are really good.
Right. Microsoft drivers, yeah. I mean, and you can even use it on a Mac, depending on which version you're on. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, the PS...
That was kind of an unintended consequence. Like, yeah. I don't think they intended that.
Although there was a period during the PlayStation 1 and 2's heyday where that was more the default controller, at least in my
default
mind.
Default PC controller?
Yeah, because like if I got like a Gravis gamepad, they modeled one of their... in the past 10 years, like,
I mean, actually
it.
Using, like, no, literally
no.
the Microsoft
No, not
controller.
Actually, but using the style and the yeah. form factor, that was more, and now the Xbox is just, the literal Xbox controller has been the de facto one. But it took a while, even during the PlayStation era, I mean, people still have a lot of love for, like, the Super Nintendo, you know, dog bone controller.
The dog bone is great.
Just because of the durability, you know, it felt... right.
Yeah.
You know, and there were so many knockoffs that felt wrong, and you're like, oh, it does matter how they built it. Like, it's not just the layout. It's just not just having the right number of buttons. It's literally the way Nintendo made that controller somehow was, like,
that
awesome.
That was kind of a quantum leap, right?
Really?
Because you went from NES with two
there
buttons.
There was lots of, like, third-party controllers that just didn't feel as good.
I had a third-party one that I used probably the majority of the time because it had the turbo switches.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, maybe someone made a good one, but
it was fine.
I don't know.
The you went from NES with two to Genesis with three to SNES with like four plus two shoulders. Like I remember right. seeing that on the box and going like, "Whoa, it's
more
got
buttons.
Four buttons and shoulder buttons, like a button that's off the edge of the controller."
Yeah, weird.
What can this be like?
But okay, but then they did the N64 controller.
That was a step back,
which was weird, right?
That was
alien as.
Nobody has three hands.
Analog stick.
It was the risk because they weren't sure if anyone was going to like the analog stick. So right. they were like, well, make this optional.
Right.
Right. Right. When they should have just gone full bore with it.
Yeah. So you could hold it on the outside or one in the middle.
It had like the middle thing
you
had.
Dude, I remember playing Turok on the N64, which
the
draw distance was super short because it couldn't really render that far. So every level is like shrouded in fog. Right. And then you're trying to play dual analog, except one's the D-pad. So you could look with the analog stick, but you were moving like left, right, forward, back. Almost like you're doing WASD with that and mouse looking, and it was just really horrible. They had like platforming sections, abysmal. That's a dark chapter
it
in
is.
Controllers.
Yeah.
I think the next shining bright spot was the Wavebird for GameCube, because that was the first legitimately
wireless one,
controller.
Right? Yeah.
That was another like, holy fuck, you can do that? You can have like, how does it, it's not laggy? How does it even work? It works. Like, it just worked perfectly.
Now, were the batteries an issue, though? Did it last a long time? Because I never had a GameCube, so I didn't play
around with
it. It used
AA's. It was fine.
Okay.
It was fine. Because I feel
like the Xbox goes forever on batteries.
That was
like,
third party?
I feel like I never have to.
No, it was first party, and it was, the way it worked is it had a little receiver thing that you literally plugged into the front of the GameCube.
Okay, but it wasn't the one they shipped with it.
There might have been bundles that shipped with it, like, later in the GameCube's life.
Okay.
But I think they mostly shipped with a wired.
Okay, because everybody I knew with GameCubes didn't have a wireless controller. I never played with the Wavebird.
Oh, man, it was great. It was so great.
Did you play GoldenEye with it?
No. Oh, no. Wait, okay. GoldenEye was on the GameCube?
That was N64.
Oh, are you right? Sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't have either of those machines, so I missed that whole era of Nintendo, because I had gone to PS1 for FF7, and it was kind of...
Yeah, there's no reason to go
back.
That
was the break.
But that was a great controller.
Yeah.
Shitty controllers. Apparently, I have a lot of thoughts on controllers. The Jaguar controller. Did you ever play with that?
Wasn't that the one that had like a phone number thing on the front?
It had like a whole... Like, it looked like the worst possible...
There you go. There's more buttons, Josh.
The worst
interpretation
you could possibly come up with. You know the way that the 360 controller or the PlayStation controller look with their snap-on keyboard attachments?
Yeah.
Like, if that was all
right.
molded into a controller that was itself bigger than, like, the original Xbox controller. Like, it was a huge, fat thing with a weird, like, keyboard, like, number phone pad on the bottom. And that was a bad, bad controller.
On the topic of keyboards, did I already say this? The Xbox One is fucking elegant and virtually perfect, and the PlayStation One is horrible and idiotic, even though it is like objectively superior in a couple ways.
Why is it objectively?
It's not like better. It's actually worse. So the PlayStation One like has it, like clips on and is this separate unit, and it's up above and it's harder to reach, and it has its own Bluetooth communication, and it has its own battery, and so you have to charge it separately.
Ugh.
Yeah. Right? You have to turn it on separately. Right? It's like more expensive. It's fancier technology.
Yeah.
But worse because of it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Xbox One just clips into the bottom. It's always out of the way. So you don't mind it being there at all times. And it always just works. It just feeds off the main controller's communication and juice.
And battery.
Yeah. It's great, but it's still not a real keyboard. And you still don't want to have to use it. But it's still amazingly better than moving a control and choosing letters on a screen, which is total bullshit.
It's pretty great. It occasionally drops a key, which is its only imperfection, in my opinion. Otherwise, it's friggin' brilliant.
Well, smart glass, right? That's coming. That's actually, it's here with this
it's in this room.
Supposedly
right
launching
now.
On the 26th.
I mean, it's if you had a Surface tablet, you could use it with the most recent Xbox update.
But when is the Android app coming out?
Android and iOS apps come later because
like much
obviously.
Later?
They haven't
later,
announced
Josh.
It. They Balls. Haven't. They haven't specifically announced release dates for those
Balls.
Apps.
Wait, I just got the dashboard. Did you get the dashboard?
I did. Yeah. I just downloaded it last night or something.
It's a tiny bit of an improvement and a tiny bit of a backstep.
But we can all stream music now.
Woo.
Yep.
Oh boy, 20th way I can do that now.
Yep. Controllers. What I miss is the twisty sticks, whatever you call those.
You mean like the ones you played Pong on the Atari with?
Like, yes, knobs that you
the
turn.
Dial?
Yes.
Dials
yes.
that you turn to move a, like a Pong paddle, right? I miss that. It is useful for some specific things,
there's
and
a
it
DS...
is the best control for some specific
there's
things.
There's a DS attachment that has that. There was like a version of Arkanoid that came with
it is very good for Arkanoid,
and it was they actually included support on several other games for use with that little DS peripheral.
Wow. Yeah. That would be one of the things you could drop in your Steam controller.
You've got DJ Hero's got dials on the controller.
Yeah, that's true.
And those are really hard to use though.
When
you're playing a fast song.
I'm good at that shit.
Yeah. I didn't say it's easy for Josh. I said it's hard for, in general. Yeah.
I never thought about plugging in my DJ Hero controller.
There you go.
In order to try to play Wizorb on XBLA.
Yeah.
That would be effing brilliant if Wizorb wrote the drivers in for the twisty knob on the DJ Hero
thing. Awesome, though. Play Wizorb, but it gets hard.
Yeah, you need a twisty thing for Wizorb.
Yeah.
It's crap with an analog stick.
All right, game controllers over the years. All right, give me another number.
Okay, another number.
Hit me up.
Regeneration.
Yeah, trackballs.
32. Oh, trackballs. I miss the arcade trackball, the like super heavy, huge
for like bowling games.
Golden Tee.
Or yeah, Golden Tee.
Like, I love the bowling games. Yeah.
Inertial trackball. Like you can tell that. Because you just have this little
it
tiny...
It just keeps spinning and spinning.
Yeah, that little tiny, you know, was it torus? T-O-R-U-S?
The shape of it, you mean?
Yeah, it's like a toroid. There's some term. You just have this little, like, segment of the sphere sticking up, and you know it's much bigger down below, and you're, like, hitting that little part. It's like this super heavy ball. Those are great.
Those
anyway.
Are good. So we've already done 32. I'm just going to do the nearest number to that I liked, which is 30.
2.1.
Our favorite... webcomics, gaming or non-gaming.
Well, we just listed these.
So, Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal.
I just put them in order. XKCD That's at the good. Top. Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal second.
I think I put them... I think they might be...
Equivalent?
They're wavering in equivalency.
1A
yeah,
and 1B.
It's hard to say. True. It depends on the day. They're both brilliant,
Cyanide
though.
And Happiness is up there.
I haven't read that one in a while, but...
You like dinosaur comics good. A lot, right?
I used to like
not
dinosaur
anymore.
Comics.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
Okay.
Too much word soup.
Gotta throw out Trenches and Penny Arcade.
Trenches, Penny Arcade.
Yep.
Let me look at my Google Reader.
Those are down there in the top 10, but not in the top 5.
Mm-hmm. Not in the top 1 with the other two that are 1.
And Cyanide is Happiness is really funny.
Penny Arcade is just like this institution. And yes. I actually will say that I actually skipped all of the Lookouts comics they were doing lately, because I just don't care about that
all. Yeah, I don't care about that shit.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Order your prints.
I'm just not into that world at all, so
man,
I'm completely...
I find that world so fun.
Like, I just don't care about it. I don't know.
You love three-word phrase, man. You love the shit out of that. But they only
I like
write
three-word
one
phrase.
Once
right.
in a while.
It's very infrequent. Another one that I used to... Oh, God, I've totally forgotten the name of it now. Wait, I'll have to think of it again.
Dilbert's still pretty good. I still read Dilbert.
Dilbert, once again, institution. Yeah. I read it because I've always read it. It's not always hilarious, but it's consistently pretty good.
Do you just get an RSS feed of Dilbert, or do you have to pay
yeah.
for that?
No, RSS. It's just
RSS.
Doghouse
is
Comics?
That, is that true for like most newspaper comics? Can you just get an RSS of like the whole comics page out of the newspaper?
I don't
newspaper?
Care about almost any newspaper comics.
Yeah, most of them are horrible.
Most of them.
Uh-huh.
The DoghouseDiaries.com?
But do you know if that's possible?
I would not know.
Okay.
All
you
be...
might be able to go to like United Comic Dogghouse.com or whatever the conglom is, and maybe do something like that. The Dogghouse Diaries. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that.
I don't read that.
It's
I read one or two. It was all right.
Yeah,
I sending me the best ones if you think it's
good. Yeah, I think I would probably say it's like an XKCD light, except more on social, less on math and science. You know, it's just kind of like wry observations about like culture and internet and stuff. It's not fantastic, but I still read it. Garfield minus Garfield.
Yeah, that's a classic.
You guys keep reading that, really?
Yeah.
I don't read it.
Well, like, it takes every like so 2 seconds to read it.
Every so often I go to that website and check it out and go like, I really like this. Isn't but it's that, not like you, it's not, you don't, there's no reason to read it every day.
Isn't it? Yeah. That's like a one concept joke.
Yeah.
Right. And it's sort
but
of like
it's a great concept.
So aren't you over it?
When it comes
I'm
up,
I'm not over it.
When it comes up in my feed, it's
that's like being over
oh,
Monty Python.
Oh, that's a good concept. Yep, I like that concept.
Aren't you over Louis C.K. because he's consistently funny, and you know that you're gonna laugh every
no,
time.
No, he
you
makes
see him.
New jokes. Garfield is one joke. It's one note.
I know.
It's and a
it's,
one
it's
note
a good joke.
Comic.
It's a good joke.
It's same thing with dinosaur comics. It's relatively one note. It was great for a couple months. Now I'm over it.
But the why I can still do Garfield minus Garfield is that it literally takes 2 seconds to digest, whereas Dinosaur Comics takes like 5 hours to digest each comic. It's too much.
I much prefer Garfield minus Garfield thought bubbles.
Okay, then read that one.
But with Garfield still in it.
Okay.
What?
Like
just like the regular Garfield strip?
Regular just Garfield
minus
strip
his dialogue.
Minus Garfield's thought bubbles.
Uh-huh. Versus...
No Garfield at all.
Excising Garfield entirely.
Yeah, excising Garfield entirely is way nuts. It's too abstract and nonsensical. Removing Garfield's...
It turns John into like a schizophrenic, like someone with actual like cognitive disorder or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's too much for John. Someone with that's too far.
When you just remove Garfield's thought bubbles, John is just like...
Crazy
super
cat guy.
Pathetic crazy cat guy,
right, yeah,
and it's more hilarious. Yeah.
It is funny.
I think they're both good in totally different
there
ways.
There are two different types of the Garfield strip, which involve less than what's normally there, that are both better than the actual fully produced strip.
You know, I actually think Jim Davis is a freaking genius.
I think he's a genius because Garfield...
He does not get the credit that I think he should for writing Garfield the way he does.
Because Garfield thought bubbles is like how he intended it.
Right, because... All the way... Because...
That's why they're thought bubbles.
Every strip works in both of these different abstract ways. The fact that every single one of them works in some successive way.
You think it's intentional?
I don't know if it's intentional, but maybe. I don't know.
So the Garfield without Garfield is totally non-intentional. That is insane. Uh-huh. That could not be intentional. But Garfield without Garfield thought bubbles is totally intentional. That's why they're thought bubbles. Garfield isn't speaking. We, growing up, have always read those comics as, like, John and then Garfield, like, talking, right? Garfield's not talking, though. He's a fucking cat. He can't talk, right? So he wrote all these, like, with the thought bubbles, like, in mind, so that if you read it like an adult and you're like, okay, Garfield didn't say anything just now because he's a cat, and you go back and you read all those with that in mind, mm-hmm. just, like, hover your hand over the thought bubbles, which is how he wrote it. They become way more hilarious because John is fucking pathetic and he's like talking to his cat constantly and he's like having these two-way conversations that's really just a one-way conversation and they become way more hilarious.
Now, in your mind when you do that, are the thought bubbles what John is imagining Garfield to be saying?
This is an excellent question.
Yes.
Oh my God, that could be a fourth way to see these comics.
And that is a fourth way to see it. Yes.
Garfield is
because
deep as shit, man.
You can either imagine it as what Garfield is actually thinking, or you can imagine it as what John thinks Garfield is thinking.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure there's a right way to interpret the difference between those two.
There's also an interpretation that Odie is not real and is literally just Garfield's imagination.
Ah. Garfield's id or something.
Yeah,
really?
Yes.
I never heard that.
If you read the comics again and think about it in those terms, that's a fifth way that you can think about Garfield.
Oh my god.
And there's also an interpretation that John is not real and is just Garfield's imagination or Odie's imagination or something. There's so many ways
they're
you
each
can...
one of them each other's imagination.
Oh right. The whole thing is fake.
Garfield is
nothing
the
is
deepest
actually
shit
happening.
Ever.
It's really deep.
We
so,
need to go get some Garfield.
So Garfield
books.
Is now the number one comic by far because no other comic can be read in six different ways. All right. I'm glad we came to that conclusion. That's the best conclusion. All right, give me another number.
Generate 11.
We've already done that, so you get a choice of either the death of, in parentheses, Rhythm...
No, just pick one.
Okay. Okay, the death of Rhythm Games.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? That shit is gone.
They're not dead at all, dude. DJ Max is coming out Friday.
Right.
Wait, DJ Max is coming out Friday for the Vita. The fucking Vita where games go to die.
Yeah, a console that basically doesn't exist.
A console that literally has bankrupted two developers.
Dude, fuck you guys. DJ Max is going to, like, sell Vitas, okay?
Right.
Like, K-pop is the new shit.
Dude,
like,
is Gangnam Style in DJ Max?
Psy is all over everything. And this is all,
he just
like,
sent AMA on Reddit.
This is all Psy equivalent. Like,
why were you so
K-pop.
Mad at that girl's ass? Because her ass was so mad.
Best answer ever.
Pretty amazing answer. Gotta hand it to Psy on that one.
Which is short for psycho, by the way.
I'm serious, though. This game, if it gets covered more, it's been a tiny bit on Kotaku and Destructoid. There are, like, DJ Max... there are a couple DJ Max big fans on those blogs. Mike Fahey fucking loves DJ Max. It's his favorite rhythm game. So I hope they come out with big reviews that people pay attention to. I think it could sell
72
systems.
Point font reviews.
Americans fucking love K-pop now, and it's only going to get bigger, and it's possible. And
is it your
and favorite? It's it features like four songs by like this girly band that's really popular in Japan right now. Mm-hmm. So it's actually literally possible that it will sell a bunch of systems in Japan.
Big in Japan.
It's because the Vita is having trouble selling in Japan too, which is really surprising because they haven't come out with a fucking Monster Hunter. Yeah.
Okay, so but the question
also
is...
Ragnarok Odyssey comes out like next week, and that's like a Monster Hunter clone, except looks really good. That could sell systems in Japan too.
But would you not agree that sort of in general the huge boom of rhythm game is kind of over?
Activision, I blame.
I mean, Rock Band is still doing DLC, which
really,
is kind of insane.
Can you really blame Activision's raping of Guitar Hero on it?
Like, I think that they were responsible for the boom and bust, yeah. The big boom and bust.
Don't you think the bust is out of their control? Do you think...
I do think it was within their control. I think it was... It didn't have to be a two-year... boom, like a mainstream two-year boom.
If they didn't come out with all the Guitar Heroes, do you think there would be this like steady demand for more Guitar Heroes right now?
I think it would have been a longer cycle. Yeah, I do. I think they could have stretched out the demand for those games, just like they killed Tony Hawk, right? They iterate once per year, and they fucking kill it. They kill those franchises.
They killed Tony Hawk because they started making terrible Tony Hawks.
Okay.
Like, well, you could say they made terrible, unnecessary Guitar Heroes.
I think Rock Band
had the better idea, which was to build a platform to just keep throwing money at rather than keep making new games.
Yeah.
Which is why I think Rock Band won that round and still is. Like I said, they're still making DLC, which kind of goes against the death of idea. They're just, I mean, I really mean the death of the crazy popularity of it. I mean, it's still there. But we don't really play rhythm games anymore.
But it's very niche at this
point. We used to play rhythm games all the time. Why don't we still play rhythm games, like, except for DJ Max? Like, why don't we play Rock Band anymore? What happened?
It's harder to get a bunch of people together.
The question is because they need to keep evolving, and they stopped evolving. Like, the Rock Band...
Madden doesn't really evolve, and yet it's still around.
That's different.
How's it different? It's the same core concept game that they keep doing every year. Call of Duty is still around. And it's lasted more than 2 years. There's something about rhythm games specifically that died that is different from those other things.
Well, they require a bunch of shit to be in your living room.
Which most people have.
Which people kind of get tired of. Most people, I mean,
well,
a lot of people didn't want that shit in their living room, right? They realized that it was actually annoying. It was super fun for a while, and it's like, oh, there's this cool thing. Maybe they got Beatles Rock Band, and they played it for a little bit, and they had their friends over, and then they're like... Okay, I'm not really as like you guys, me to a lesser extent, but really all three of us were super into it, and we bought a lot of the DLC, and we played it many times, and we were trying to get very good at those instruments, etc. But it's a bunch of plastic shit that has to be in your living room, and people get old enough where they feel like, I can't really have that sticking around any longer, you know? They just got rid of it.
Now, right? is that because you have a kid, though, Chaz?
First of all, yeah. I mean, that's one of the factors, right? Yeah. Obviously. You have to buy it in the first place, so they're more expensive than regular games, right? You have to have a space to set it all up. You have to be in a stage in your life when you can get a bunch of people together to do it, and they all have to be into it. It really was a thing where if there's a big social boom with that genre, then you can get a lot of people interested enough to come and do it. But it requires, you know, four and really more people who can cycle in and out to be fun, right? There's a lot more barriers.
So
to entry
none of those
than
things are true
game.
for all the rhythm games that use controllers or touchscreen or, you know, existing input mechanisms,
yeah.
Like DJ Max traditionally or the new Rock Band, whatever, on Xbox with the two buttons or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Which you're not interested in. And a bunch of like rhythm games on iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's why those are the ones that are still around and can still get made, right?
Okay. So they're not dead.
But the boom is over, I think.
Yeah. I feel like the critical mass has been reached and now we're in a denouement.
Now it's a fans of the genre type thing as opposed to they're like RTSs now, right? There's a group of people who like them who will continue to play them. You're in that group, right? But it's not the super mainstream thing it was for a couple years there.
Will there be a new rhythm game that gets kickstarted, basically, is the
Maybe.
Question. You know, like,
cool.
Will there be a renaissance of indie music game makers? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's too soon to tell, but it's possible.
Clarinet Hero.
Right, yeah. There's a bunch of instruments that did not get serviced by the boom. It was only the popular rock star stuff. But yeah, clarinet, you know, flute, violin, you know, any of the harder, less popular. Okay.
Zydeco Blues Review Hero.
Right, right. Accordion Hero. All right, new number.
Cowbell Hero.
New number. Give me another number.
Oh. All right. This will be our last one. Last one. And do it. Be a phone. 17.
All right. Atmosphere. What makes it? And can it override bad gameplay? Well, Josh, you don't need to weigh in on this because I know what you're going to say. Chaz? No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know why you said that because I don't know what Josh is going to say, but...
well, no, just because he's the mechanic guy.
The game... Okay, yeah. The game that pops into my mind immediately when you said Atmosphere was Amnesia, The Dark Descent.
Okay.
That's a game that I think is 100% about atmosphere. That's a first-person shooter horror game. We played like 10 minutes of it until I got too scared to play anymore. but I have watched I watched Day 9 play it online all the way through and enjoyed experiencing it that way. It's definitely all about atmosphere. I think another one that I think that I haven't played.
But question, what makes that atmosphere? Why do you say it's an atmospheric game or that's all about atmosphere?
Because it is, that was an area of emphasis for the developers. So I think what we mean when we say it's an atmospheric game are that the art direction is good. The sound design probably contributes to that. What else? The
music
pacing,
yeah, music. Pacing probably applies as well. I think Slender Man is another one that I've been hearing a lot about, but I haven't played.
Minimal UI.
Yeah.
Slender is one of those ones that...
Immersion, basically.
We haven't talked about Slender?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It hasn't.
It's one of those ones that I would say, hey, we should go play this together, except I know we never, ever would.
Yeah, I don't really want to play that game.
What you should do is not even go and watch like videos of the game. Watch the videos of people playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... Two girls, one cup reaction videos
really?
Or whatever.
That's on our show.
Sorry.
Now? Okay.
Sorry.
It's like reaction videos for anything other than that. Dear God.
I literally never saw that, and I'm glad. All I've seen are reactions to that.
Good.
Right? So that's my comparison is the one
I have
that
never
I
seen it, but I have read a description of it.
Like, I don't need to play Slender.
No one go read a description of that.
Yeah.
if you want.
You'll
to.
Be glad you didn't.
Yeah, it's
but,
not worth it.
But yeah, watch people play Slender, and it's hilarious. They have a bunch of those videos linked on their site
because they are just fucking scared the whole time, right?
Yeah,
and, like, shitting their pants.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So you guys have mentioned two atmospheric games that are basically meant to scare you.
Yes.
Does it have to scare you?
I was thinking Journey is the first one that popped into my
head. Absolutely.
I think minimal UI is, did we say that? Is the other, another?
Yeah, that goes to immersion, as Mike mentioned.
Yeah. So basically, because the UI is like the non-natural part of it, it's the gamey part of it. So the less of it there is,
often, yeah,
the more you feel a part of it.
A game that is known for being immersive, atmospheric, and has an innovative UI is Dead Space.
Yeah,
right?
Dead Space. Yep.
Dead Space puts the UI as cues on the character himself, right? Mm-hmm. Like your health meter is reflected in lights that crawl up or drop down the suit of armor that you can see from behind, right?
Yeah.
Like up the spine of the character. So that's right. That's an interesting way to attack that problem, so that you don't have to put a big HUD on the screen. You know, we were talking.
And yet,
that's
another game that's known for like trying to scare you.
Yeah, yeah. Horror.
That
in
seems
general,
to be a very
I think it's a genre that doesn't work at all if it doesn't have the atmosphere and the immersion.
Yeah.
Right. So it's key to a horror game.
If you don't have the atmosphere and the immersion, then you have
you're not scared.
Deadly Premonition.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, because like another one, I think of
a sheet is flapping.
I think of the
Deadly Premonition.
The Resident Evil games, the Silent Hill games. Those are all very atmospheric games. But they're also meant to scare you. You know, I'm just thinking even of something like the Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like, because the other half of the question was, can atmosphere override gameplay? Like, can something that's super atmospheric make up maybe for gameplay that isn't great?
Yes, absolutely.
And I totally agree, because I like being in games that bring me in and immerse me and have like either art or art style, even. Like, something that I never mentioned that I was kind of kicked myself when I was describing why Fallout 3 was a best game ever was the art style of the Vault Boy. Throughout the whole game, he's kind of like a caricature that gets used for a lot of the UI, like describing skills and stuff like that.
And the kind of 50s Americana vibe.
Yeah, the 50s Americana vibe. You know, there was thought put into making it you know, like everything kind of fit together, and there's
art direction.
Yeah, purpose, art direction, and not just you know, like no thought. And so that's a big part of getting me even interested in that world at all.
Yeah, it can make up a huge difference for a lack of polish or mechanics or whatever. It's one of the reasons we all love Mass Effect so much, even though it's notoriously had problems with control or UI or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, the beginning of Mass Effect 2, when you're out in space, you're in your ship that kind of gets blown up, and then you're walking around the ship in your spacesuit.
God damn it.
You know, when everyone else abandons it. That was the most intense, like, awesome intro to any game ever, in my opinion. And then when you're like walking through the navigation room and you look up, and the whole top is blown off, and you just see the planet above you in space, and it's all silent. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, so awesome.
Very amazing.
And even as much as we love those games, and as much as I've played Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, the control is still kind of broken. Like, no matter how good I am at Mass Effect multiplayer, or other people that I play with that are, like, even way better than me, right, I still snap into cover by accident constantly. It's just the problem. It's a mechanic with the game. It's kind of broken. You just have to put up with it, and then you have to survive those situations when you do that, and you have to try to minimize it. Yeah. But we put up with it because the game is really immersive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other examples, earlier examples of games that I found immersive or atmospheric, and I can't really think of anything. You know, Mario World sort of comes to mind in that it does have a very consistent art direction, but
so Final Fantasy 3 was the big one for us.
Yeah,
right.
Big one. What
you find
for immersion in high school?
Atmosphere
for SNES immersion.
For SNES immersion. Yeah, I was thinking of Secret of Mana, Chrono Trigger, basically into the Square Enix.
Yeah, I was really RPGs, into the story.
Or just
now, do you think that those games
or
themselves?
That was the same era.
Myst is an interesting
choice.
Myst,
because the gameplay is pretty horrid. So it's really up to the immersion that you're on an island, that you're in this world, that makes up for the fact that
I didn't think the gameplay was horrid. I was super immersed in Myst when I played it.
It's basically like a QuickTime VR.
Did you play it in its time, or did you play it like years later?
No, I'm sure I didn't play it all the way through in its time because I probably got frustrated by the puzzles at the time. Yeah.
Oh, well, that was one of the ones for me. We have different experiences that I was super immersed in, and I played with people, and it was one of the first like FPS type games because most games were not 3D, right?
Yeah.
And the only way it did the cool 3D, because it had like the best graphics ever.
Right.
It wasn't like bullshit QuickTime VR. It was like the best graphics ever because it was these
pre-rendered
single spot, you know, instances or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was like the most immersive world video game I'd ever played by far. In the era when we're playing Final Fantasy III, where I'm really immersed in the story, like the graphics were 3D with textures instead of pixels, top down, you know, miniature dudes.
As far as those Super Nintendo JRPGs, do you feel like those were immersive or atmospheric because they really were, or because of the amount of time that you spent with them?
No. They were. Like you could go play the beginning.
If you play 80 hours of anything, you're going to get immersed.
You could play the first 30 minutes of Final Fantasy III right now, and you'll get super immersed because it's really good art direction. They have like the you play this intro sequence where it's just like wispy wind,
snow.
And then you see dialogue between these soldiers, and then you're like fighting and stuff, and you're in a mech, and you're like, who are these people? And then after the whole sequence of the mechs and some combat, then your mech like marches slowly over this like tundra with a snowstorm using Mode 7 with like the credits slowly rolling up and this really good music, and you slowly see like in the distance, you know, something raise behind the tundra as you're like marching up.
It is
like an epic movie. You know, it is just the best atmosphere from moment one. It's not just because it's a long game and that you're reading good dialogue. It's the music and the graphics. You know, at the time, those were super cool graphics.
Yeah.
And everything, you know.
Yeah. So it's a multifaceted thing that brings you in. You know, it's.
What about games that kind of make fun of their own atmosphere, like Just Cause? You find Just Cause to be atmospheric?
You mean like just in it? It's got silly characters with dumb dialogue.
Well, it's like internally consistent, but it is kind of ridiculous. It's not atmospheric in a traditional sense, but you might argue that it has a certain kind of like a je ne sais quoi, goofy, fun atmosphere. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I see that game much more from the mechanics standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that game because of mechanics and. But it's also beautiful. Like, the rendering of that world is pretty damn good, even by today's standards, I think. Like, they did a really good job of creating, you know, something that was believable and looked nice. And just flying in a plane up in the air and seeing the sun set and come back up, kind of stuff like that, like the changing of night to day, is just very aesthetically pleasing. But once again, it's sort of like you're asking, like, do you play that game just to go visit Panao? You know, just to be in Panao, maybe? I don't know, maybe. Yeah, partly. It's just a cool place to hang out.
Yeah, so it's more than...
yeah,
so
building red.
Building a video game with good atmosphere is more than just graphics, right?
Yeah.
I think we're arriving at... good graphics help, right? But we also kind of want to care about the world. We want to care about the characters.
You could even say like really old school, I don't know, like, you could even say like a text adventure has good atmosphere with no graphics the descriptions are good and bolster your imagination.
I would argue that a text adventure has it much easier than a game that is trying to render a realistic world to be.
Because it's leaving it all up to imagination?
Because it is like your imagination is going to be way more immersive.
Well, but if the descriptions are not good and the dialogue is not good,
yeah, poorly written one. I'm saying it has a better shot at being immersive, right?
Books have an easier time at it in general, right?
Absolutely, right. Yeah,
because they're not taking an unlimited stock of what could be and narrowing it down to, nope, this is what that looks like. It's this is what those people sound like.
Uncanny Valley, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm there with you. So video games, sorry, man, you can't beat books.
It is so a little bit of a an unknown quantity, right? Yeah. When if a game is immersive, if a game has good atmosphere, but when it does, you instantly know it. You're like, wow, this is a great game. And like you say, Josh, regarding FF3, you know it quickly. Like, you can tell as soon as you start a game.
You can tell from the start screen
right away,
a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Chrono Trigger start screen, holy shit.
It's
a big old clock pendulum.
Yeah, like
that
ticking.
It comes in from the side, zoomed in really far, and then it slowly zooms out, and then the pendulum like slows and makes the logo come out of it and stuff.
And then awesome music starts playing.
Yeah.
And that's key, man.
Music is a key factor.
The music really, for me, yeah, I play tons of probably shitty games as long as they have music in them.
Right.
That's good, obviously. So.
Cool.
There you go, game makers. Do that. Do more of that.
Thank you for listening to The Escort Mission. I have been Chaz.
I have and will always be Mike.
I will have been Josh.
Nice.
I will have always been.
Was that
Mike?
Future perfect? I will have. Yeah. Anyway, there was a Louis Black. There's a Louis Black joke where he was talking about
Louis B.K.
That's funny. John Ashcroft was talking about the known knowns and unknown unknowns, and he got into this like whole grammar.
I thought that was Cheney that said that.
No, it was Ashcroft.
Okay,
it was one of those neocons. It wasn't Cheney.
Okay. All right.
And he got into this whole grammar kick. He gave a speech that was a little about grammar. And so Louis Black on The Daily Show once said, you know, fortunately, he forgot about the pluperfect subjunctive, so the Bush administration can have been having had to bite me. It was an awesome joke. Anyway, thank you for listening. I have been Josh. That has been Mike. That has been Josh. I have been Chaz.
Whoa. What happened?
I thought you were doing all three wrong on purpose.
No, I wasn't. I should have done that.
Nice.
But I was just making mistakes.
You should have sold that.
Please go to our website, theescortmission.com. Send us a mail. Buy stuff through our Amazon link. Thank you for listening.
Number 25 in the can.